We are now recording.
Okay. I don't have my toy up here to bang the gavel, so I'll just call this meeting to order. It's February 23rd, Board of Technical Registration. Kurt, can you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Here.
Jack Gilmore.
Here.
Neil Jones.
Here.
Clarence McAllister.
Here.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Here.
Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Everode.
Here.
We have a quorum with four vacancies.
Great. Thank you, Kurt. We have at least one member of the public that would like to speak, so I will go through the call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes, pursuant to ARS 38431.01H. The board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public, unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Mr. Booth, I think you wanted to share some wisdom with the board.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Gilmore. I just wanted to take a minute and thank everybody for the opportunity to serve on the board. It's been more than pleasurable. It's been one of my greatest honors professionally, and I cherish every minute that I've had there at the board. Last week, in a conversation with the governor's office, it was clear to me that upon my announcement of going to Oregon, I had to vacate my position, rather. So that puts us in the circumstance of me sitting on the sidelines today, but I'm watching patiently and cheering for everybody. So, again, thank you all, and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you, Jason. And we certainly miss your presence here, especially on this last session before you take off. So best wishes to you in Oregon. Okay, let's move on to adoption of the minutes. Review, consideration, and possible action following: approve, modify, and or reject January 26, 2021 board minutes. Any board members have questions regarding those minutes? If not, a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the January 26, 2021 board meeting minutes as presented.
Second.
Great. We have a motion and a second. Kurt, can you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Abstain.
Abstain. Motion carried with one abstention.
Thank you, Kurt. We can move past. We have no formal hearings today or proceedings to deal with, so we go right into enforcement matters.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to let you know that the board's attorney for the Mills matter, he can speak up to about 10:30 is the latest that he can speak, just so you are aware.
Okay. So
that's his cutoff point, is 10:30.
You might give me a reminder. If we can get a break in here, do you suggest we do that now?
It's totally up to you. I know there's other people waiting on the phone, so you might be able to kick out a lot of stuff before then.
Okay. I want to go ahead and consent. There's two call-ins in 6A, right?
Correct. See, 6A5 and 6A6 has call-ins, so 1, 2, 3, 4, do not.
So, Mr. Chair, I would like to make a motion to consent cases 6A1, 2, 3, 4, 7, and 8.
Great. We have a motion to dismiss for enclosure of those six items. Is there a second?
I'll second that, Chair.
Thank you. Kurt, can you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, let's go on to 6A5 since we have a call in. Is Mr. Meschke, if I said that correctly, on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Mr. Meschke, are you aware that this is recommended for dismissal?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let me... Okay, this is...
Mr. Chair, this is from the Humphrey Angel. I know this case came to the board in December of 2020. The alleger, I think, claimed that he would provide an additional home inspection report, and I didn't see that in the packet, so unless the investigators want to comment, I don't see any new evidence to change the recommendation.
Okay, do we? One of the investigators.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I got nothing further from the ledger. We did have an EAC as requested by the board. All four members of the EAC voted to unsubstantiate the allegations and dismiss this case. I think Mr. Meschke is just on the line to answer any questions that the board might have.
Okay. Thank you. Any board members have questions for Mr. Meschke?
Mr. Chair, I would like to thank Mr. Meschke for his patience on the process and move that we dismiss the complaint.
Second. Kurt?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Kurt. Thank you, Mr. Meschke, for calling in.
I thank you guys for a wonderful job. Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to 686. We have the ledger on the phone. And Mr. Stoll, can you confirm, Kurt?
Let's first, Ms. Ginchev, are you on the line? I see her in the list, and she's not muted. Maybe she walked away for a second. But the respondent, Mr. Stoll, wishes to be called, so let me do that real quick. And Rhonda has raised her hand. Mr. Stoll, we have contacted you here at the board. To unmute yourself, is star 6 on your phone?
Yes, you'd like me to mute my phone?
Oh, no, I didn't know you were there. I apologize, sir. We thought you were muted.
Oh, okay. I was, and then I heard you, so.
Okay.
But I can.
No? All right.
Okay, thank you, Kurt. This is case number P21033. The synopsis of this complaint, on September 24, 2020, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent failed to conduct a land boundary survey, in accordance with the Arizona Boundary Survey minimum standards. It is alleged the respondent used an incorrect angle to determine the boundary line between lots 120 and lot 119 at Starlight Pines Ranchettes No. 2, Coconino County, Arizona. The alleger is reporting a survey conducted in 1997, recorded an angle of north 14, 26 minutes, 45 seconds east, while the respondent's record of survey shows an angle of north 14, 27 minutes, 51 seconds east. The conclusions of the staff investigation is that the respondent has not violated board statute ARS 32-128, C4, as it relates to AAC R4-30-30113, and that respondent failed to conduct a land boundary survey in accordance with the Arizona Boundary Survey Minimum Standards. Okay. Is Ginship now on the phone?
Yeah.
Okay. Rhonda, would you want to share with the board your position on this? Just so you know, this did go through an enforcement advisory committee, and that committee did not recommend that there be a formal hearing. So that's where the recommendation came to dismiss this. Do you want to share with the board your position on this complaint?
It didn't go through the EAC.
It did not, right.
Okay.
Just the assessors.
Went through assessment.
Yeah, it went through an assessment, but there was a recommendation not to do a EAC meeting.
Correct.
Thank you.
So,
Ms. Ginship?
She's on there, but I don't see anything coming through. She's not muted. I do have her phone number here. Maybe I should just try to call her as well.
Yeah.
I heard somebody pick up. Star 6 to unmute yourself.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Turn off the volume on your computer.
Better.
All right. Did you turn off the volume on your computer?
Is Rhonda still there?
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. It's just you're creating an echo. You probably have your computer still on while you're on the phone, so the computer needs to be have its volume turned off and muted so there's not an echo.
Ms. Ginship, are you able to hear us?
I can hear you.
All right. Can we both dismiss this? Close it.
So, there's still an echo. You guys, it's up to you. It's she needs to turn off one of her devices that's creating the echo. You might just get out of the meeting on your computer entirely. Might be a good way to go. Just here. Actually, how about this? I'm going to remove you from the meeting on the computer, and then just stay on the phone. We'll see if that does it. All right. Try to speak now, Ms. Ginship.
Ms. Ginship, are you online?
I think she hung up her phone.
Ah. Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, I'm going to make a motion to dismiss this case.
Okay, we have a motion.
I'll second that, Chair.
Okay. Kirk, can you do a roll call, please?
Okay. Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Mr. Chair, can we have just a quick discussion on it? I don't know. I'm uncomfortable not hearing from her. Can we just move on to the other case and then try to come back to her later?
I could try calling her again because I kicked her off the meeting.
Yeah, let's do one more.
Yeah, I don't.
Because we have Mr. Stoll. That's all right. We have Mr. Stoll online.
Thank you for being patient with us, Mr. Jones.
I'm texting you.
Your message, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Bye bye.
Mr. Stoll, are you still online?
Yeah, if the board would like, I could explain just generally some particulars of this case if you don't have my response in front of you.
If you could just give us a quick summary of what this is all about, then I think we can maybe move on.
Yeah.
We'll see if she calls back.
Yeah, so I had a call from Tom Shannon, who became my client, and he had put a fence on his property, the east line bordering he and the Jinchev. And he had intentionally placed the fence a few feet in on his property. And at some point, he and his neighbor became unfriendly, and there was some lumber piled next to the fence, which he didn't want there anymore on the Jinchev side. So he called me to survey his property, and I did survey it, found all the original monuments. Everything fit very closely to the original plat. And then he had me make a record of the survey so that he could take action to have this lumber removed away from the fence. And so I think with the Jinchev, as far as it regards the technical aspects of my survey, it's just that as a layperson, they don't understand that the basis of bearing for the bearings were assumed on Mr. Shannon's south line, and so there's just a slight difference in the bearing and distance along their common line, but of course it all is original. That's the legal location of the line, and it fits very closely. So in a nutshell, that's what's going on, and I believe Mr. Shannon, as a result of this, has sold his property and relocated. So I think that's where we're at right now.
Okay.
Is there any questions I can answer beyond that?
Mr. Stoll, no, just one quick question. You said you placed the fence how far back from the property line?
I'm sorry, didn't quite hear that.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Stoll, this is Alejandro Angel. I'm asking how far from the property line did Mr. Shannon place his fence?
Approximately 3 feet, and it varied somewhat as is shown on my survey map, but generally that.
Thank you.
I'm here now.
Okay. Ms. Gintip?
Ms. Gintip?
Yes.
This is Jack Gilmore. I'm standing in the chair today. Could you share with the board your position on this? On this complaint?
Yeah, we know it's a very small margin of error, but it is a minor violation. But our concern is just more that the bearings and the angles and the coordinates do not match the actual plot that we purchased back in 97. So we just wanted to make a statement that we're concerned, what if you know, what, why the margin of error, you know, is in the favor of our neighbor.
Okay.
As Mr. Chair, and if I may try to explain based on what I read on the materials of the case.
Please do.
Yes.
So, Genshev, what I noted, is it Genshev or Genshev?
It's Genshev.
Genshev, okay, thank you. So, we did have two other surveyors review this case and give it their opinion, and they both opined that when you retrace a survey, there's slight variations on the angles, and there's a tolerance for what the margin of error is, that acceptable in margins that are not acceptable. This one falls well into the acceptable ranges, and they provided a calculation, and I checked it, that the difference in angles makes a difference of about an inch and a half at the end of the property line. Just going forward for your own use, what really controls is the pins on the ground is what typically determines your property boundary. So I absolutely understand your concern, but I think to me the biggest sort of misunderstanding was that your neighbor did not originally place the fence on the property line, and that just might have confused everybody, but we didn't find any issues with the survey.
So here's the question for going forward in the future. 5 years from now, a new neighbor runs a survey. What is it based on? Do they go back to the original bearings, or is it based on this survey, Mr. Stoll's survey?
I don't want to get beyond my depth and give you advice, but what the surveyor will do is they will try to sweep, you know, they'll find one of your property pins and try to sweep the angle. And for all intents and purposes, those angles aren't the same. So when they sweep it and measure the distance, they'll find a pin on your corner. That's what they would typically use.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the angle
and
is.
What
I guess you will need to try to measure a third angle that's slightly different than both of them. Most likely.
Okay. And who is responsible for making sure that the original pins are not tampered with?
I think nobody should tamper with pins. So, I mean,
but who is responsible? Who is responsible for making sure that they are not tampered with?
That takes a new survey, I presume, to confirm the original placement of those monuments, those pins.
You don't would the board mind?
I would love to discuss more, but I think we're getting beyond the case.
Yeah.
It worries me a little bit.
Okay.
That we're not. We can't give advice. I guess, as much as we want to, we can't give advice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you for calling in.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for your consideration.
Okay. We have a motion to accept the dismissal. We have a motion and a second. So would you do the roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Kurt.
Who did I take it?
Okay, I need to move on to 6B1.
Hello?
Hello? Who's this?
Okay. And if your matter has been discussed, you can hang up. You don't have to stay on the line. So we're going to 6B1.
Kurt, do we have Mr. Dean South, the ledger, on the phone, and Mr. Huff?
Let's see.
Oh, Huff needs must be called.
Mr. South, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Let me give Mr. Huff a call. Mr. Huff, are you on the line? Star 6 to unmute yourself. Mr. Huff? And star 6 to unmute yourself. I think that must have dropped off.
Okay. Are you going to try and call him again, Kurt?
I'm going to try to call him one more time here.
Is that the number he gave us? That looks like a very general number.
That's the number I have here. I just copy and paste whatever runs in the email. Is Mr. Huff?
Sorry, this is the front desk. Let me grab him. Hold on.
Okay. I didn't know anyone. No worries. Is this Mr. Huff?
Yeah.
This is Kurt Winter at the Arizona Board of Technical Registration at the current board meeting. Are you available to assist your matter?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
Good. Okay, this is case number P21-010. The synopsis of the complaint: on August 6th, 2020, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent's engineering design of retaining walls in the South Residence project at 4955 West Braided Brain in Flagstaff, Arizona, on or about April 2nd, 2019, was inadequate and resulted in the overstressed and structurally unsound condition of the walls. It is alleged that the respondent failed to apply the appropriate knowledge and skill while providing professional services as an engineer on the above-named project. It is further alleged that the respondent may have accepted a professional engagement outside of his professional registered branch of engineering while lacking the qualifications, technical knowledge, or experience to perform the engagement. The investigation conclusions. This investigation concludes that respondent has not violated Board Statute ARS 32128C4 as it relates to AAC R4-30-3016 and that respondent did not fail to apply the appropriate technical knowledge and skill providing professional services on the South Residence retaining walls, 4955 West Braided Rain, Flagstaff, Arizona. This investigation also concludes that respondent did not accept a professional engagement outside of his professional registered branch of engineering while lacking the qualifications, technical knowledge, or experience to perform engagements in violation of ARS 32128C4 as it relates to AAC R4-30-30118. This investigation concludes that respondent has violated Board Statute ARS 32128C4 as it relates to AAC R4-30-303B and that respondent failed to file the affidavit of seal timely with the board. There's a staff recommendation for a letter of concern. Okay. Let's start with the ledger. Mr. South, you want to share your position on this complaint?
Yes, I appreciate the opportunity to speak today. So Adam Huff did the structural calculations on this home. He was aware that Epic Engineering stamped the structural calculations. Are you getting feedback or is it just me?
We don't hear feedback on our end here.
Okay. I'll just continue. Epic Engineering stamped the home as being structurally completed, and it was not. Adam Huff has admitted that Epic Engineering never did structural calculations on this home. We hired Gervasio and Associates to research this and to give us their opinion, and Gervasio and Associates found that 9 walls were structurally insufficient. Adam Huff disagreed with that. He said all of the walls were fine, which required Fred Nelson from Gervasio to go into the home and drill holes into the wall and see where the rebar was and the actual thickness of the block. And the two of them subsequently had to do calculations and reconcile their calculations. And in the process of doing that, Adam Huff had only done 1/2 of the calculations on the walls. He only did the structural calculations in one direction. And in my opinion, Adam Huff doesn't know how to do structural calculations. Or at worst, he tried to cover up that there was a problem. But in any event, both firms agreed the walls were defective and they required remediation. I would also note that when Fred Nelson went out there and there were about 7 to 9 holes drilled, a couple of the holes showed that the rebar was in the correct position and Fred Nelson did not include those walls. Adam Huff, at that point, knowing that the house was structurally unsound, and in fact one wall was over 700% overstressed, did not report this to Coconino County. Coconino County had no idea there was a problem. And I tried to go to Coconino County, the head inspector there, and have the construction stopped. And he said there's nothing they can do because Epic Engineering had stamped the house as being structurally reviewed. Now, recently, we are in litigation with Capstone Homes. And Capstone Homes did not remediate the walls before they sold it to the house to somebody else. They did not remediate the portion of the walls that were underground, and they told us in a sworn deposition that Adam Huff had agreed that the walls underground were fine after he had subsequently agreed with Fred Nelson, or earlier agreed with Fred Nelson, that the walls were required remediation and were defective. Adam Huff, when he's changing his mind after he agreed with another engineer, should have picked up the phone and called Fred Nelson. He never did that. We have photographs and measurements taken by Nelson, which were provided to Huff for his calculations as evidentiary support. I also witnessed the measurements by Fred Nelson. He went hole by hole with me through all of this. Yet Huff backed Capstone Homes because the remediation on the underground walls is very expensive and difficult to fix. The walls on the outside of the homes were fixed because it's pretty inexpensive, although they weren't fixed per the HOA. So in summary, I would just like to say that this needs to be reviewed in much greater detail. In my opinion, Adam Huff does not have good engineering skills, but the worst part is he agreed that the walls needed remediation with a well-known engineer, Fred Nelson, with on-site measurements. When Nelson was out of the picture, he changed his mind and said the underground walls were fine. As a result of this, a family is living in a dangerous home today, and his loyalty needs to be to his oath of safety and not to a client who wants to cut corners and save money. And I also want to point out to you that this behavior was so egregious that Gervasio and Associates also filed with a technical board due to the sense of responsibility to the profession. And Adam Huff, all of his miscalculations and what he has done has cost us, my wife and I, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And we don't think that, honestly, we don't think he fits practice in Arizona.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for sharing your position on this. Mr. Huff, what do you want to share with the board this morning?
Yeah, so a lot of what Mr. Chow said is not true, and I'll explain. Number one, you said the wall was overstressed 700%. That never happened. And number two, when I was given, okay, number one, Epic Engineering was hired just to do a lateral analysis on this home, okay? And then I was hired, excuse me, Epic Engineering was hired by Capstone to design, I think, six different retaining walls, just generic retaining walls, not pertaining to this project, okay? And I gave them details for different wall heights, including a 12-foot tall max height wall. Okay, so then when they built this, one of the walls was 13 feet tall, which I did not do a detail for this specific job. And so when they built it, and we didn't do any engineering for any of the walls specifically for this job. And so when they built it, I think what set this off was there's some cracking in the basement floor slab, and which we did not design. I guess they used grout, masonry grout, to pump it in, and so it shrunk a lot, and there's a lot of shrinkage cracks in the basement slab. And so the owner hired Fred, who went and looked at that, and also noticed these tall walls that didn't seem right. And so when he wrote a report and Capstone shared that with me, then they engaged me to help mitigate the problem, which I did not create. I did not create that problem because we did not do specific engineering for those foundation walls for this job. And I was given measurements by the contractor, and initially when I did my report, I said, okay, well, the reinforcement they have in these walls is okay, except for there's two walls that are too tall and don't have adequate reinforcement. And I pointed that out to them. But then Fred said, well, we need to go measure the wall from the top of footing to the top of wall. And I thought that's what the measurements the Capstone was giving me. And once they did give those to me, then we reanalyzed it, and then we noticed there's two other walls, one at the entry and one at the garage, that were overstressed. And so we mentioned that to Capstone, and they met to do a mitigation, and we're going to use soil stabilization methods or grout injection in the soil, and that didn't happen. At that point, I understand Mr. South backed out of the contract, or something happened where that never happened. So the house was then out of contract, and Capstone decided to go forward, and I did some design to install buttress walls for two of the walls that we had previously shown were inadequate, which they did. And the other walls at the entry and the garage, what we didn't take into account, there are buttress wall returns there, and when I analyzed it, I felt comfortable with it. We show that the stresses were okay when we analyzed it as a plate model, and there's no signs of failure in those walls at all, and there never will be. They're adequate, and the one garage wall that's over 13 feet tall, there's a return right by it. And so when we modeled that, we showed it was okay. I'm not concerned about them. And so when they added the other buttress walls, with those walls that we determined were inadequate, there's no signs of failure on those walls. And between Capstone and us, and our insurance and their insurance, that's covered. We're going to stand behind it. So the problem that happened was the measurements that I got from Gervasio, that I got from Capstone were not accurate, because they gave me a sheet, and they labeled all the wall heights, and that's when I analyzed everything, and then Gervasio had different measurements, and he said, well, that's not adequate, and then I called Fred, and we talked through it, and then that's when we decided on which walls needed the remediation and soil grouting. And like I said, that was all designed to take place and happen, but for whatever reason, I don't know the circumstances, Capstone didn't do that because of there's some contractual issues, something, so that wasn't done. And so, anyway, any questions, I guess?
Yep. Mr. Huff, this is Neil Jones. I'm an architect on the board. You said you were only hired to do lateral analysis.
That's right.
How did that lead into designing all of these generic walls?
Yeah, so Capstone wanted us to, for different situations, different scenarios, wall heights, they needed a detail. They knew, you know, what size of block, what reinforcement to use. And so we did a, like a 6 foot, 8 foot, 10 foot, and 12 foot wall, if I recall. But they were not, you know, job specific. But in this case, sounds like they made them job specific. And this house was built on a slope, so they had various wall heights. And so that's what we were asked to do. Cupertino County, I think they're, from what I understand, they required a lateral analysis on this home, but didn't require full engineering. So we were only asked to do a lateral analysis, and then Capstone asked us to do, you know, like I said, 4 or 5 different wall heights for generic details. The stamp details don't even have a specific job name on them. So they wanted to see what options they had and what those different wall height construction requirements were.
I just find it very, I'm kind of alarmed, amazed that a contractor would take a bunch of generic details and just apply them all over, everywhere, without consulting a structural engineer or a civil engineer, especially on sloping sites.
Right.
Sloping sites are very technical and require a lot of study.
That's right.
And so do you think this is a contractor issue? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, because we can only do so much with the information we've been given and what we've been asked to do. So I think this is an issue where the contractor wasn't required, you know, by the county or building official to submit site-specific drawings with the wall heights labeled and specific engineering for each of those walls. And so that wasn't done. And that's why we, after the fact, had to mitigate and decide what needed to be done.
Okay.
So subsequently,
Chair, I have a couple of questions.
Go ahead, Alejandro.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I want to ask both the alleger and the respondent if there's any imminent danger from the walls, or if they're being remediated, or if they would be more during a, you know, seismic event, or, you know, some sort of you know, saturated soil condition that would create issues. Anybody, what's the current situation?
I would like to respond to that and some of the other things that Adam said. I had just spoken to Fred about it, and the garage wall was agreed upon to be remediated. And in the deposition, the president of Capstone Homes said, Adam Hopp said, it did not need to be remediated. And Fred Nelson absolutely said the wall needs to be remediated, and as that wall sits there today, and as a family lives in there, that wall is a problem. You've got two engineers. Adam Huff agreed with Fred Nelson last year, but now, after Fred Nelson is out of the picture, he agrees with Capstone Homes that that wall does not need remediation. The other thing I want to say is in Capstone, when I was complaining about the walls and the structure, Capstone Homes took me into their facility and showed me that Epic Engineering designed for them walls that are 6, 8, 10, and 12 feet tall, and that is what they used to design homes. There was nothing in there about how much soil is against the wall. And then Capstone Homes takes the design, and they need it to be stamped. Epic Engineering stamps the walls. They stamp it on the page which says the home has been fully structurally engineered, not just shear walls. And Epic Engineering, we supplied that. You can go, you guys in the tech board can look at that. Shows it is completely structural engineered. Epic Engineering stamped that. And I went to the head inspector of Coconino County about the walls and how they could get like this. And he told me, look at this. He pulled out the plan. Epic Engineering has stamped them. That's the gold standard. This house is fully structural engineered where they stamped it. And if you have another engineer who doesn't agree with it, and I had Fred Nelson's 400-page report, he said, the only thing you can do is go to court because I'm not going to be the arbiter of which engineer is correct. So Epic Engineering, Capstone Homes is designing homes on hillsides, and Capstone Homes is not a small builder. They built over 1,000 homes. They've got 1,500 homes going in Prescott. They've got multiple communities here. Capstone Homes is using this model that Epic Engineering has designed. They take it, and then after they design it, they submit it to Epic. Epic stamps it. And I believe it's not just our home that it was structurally unsound. It's a lot of homes that have this Epic Engineering model, and then the Capstone, the Epic stamp that are submitted to the county. And that's one of our concerns for the board. We know our neighbor has a similar situation with just 8-inch walls. And 8-inch walls are inadequate for when you have a lot of soil against a home, especially in our case where our walls actually, when you have the trusses, were over 13 feet. So the other thing that Fred Nelson pointed out to me about Adam Huff is when he did some design work in April that was given to Capstone, he didn't specify where the rebar was. He didn't put the proper, I guess you have to say how many inches in the rebar is. He didn't do that. He just put it on a drawing without any specifications, which further confused things. So this whole thing with Epic Engineering and how they've given Capstone a model to design homes in hilly areas is quite concerning. And that's really the reason, one of the main reasons we're going to the tech board. We believe there are many Capstone Epic homes that are improperly designed.
Hi, this is Investigator Carell. If I could just add some information for the board. Mr. Jones, I think what you said is correct. What I'm coming across is this is partially a construction issue. You know, these home builders will take plans from engineers and even architects, and they will apply them to several different lots on their fields. You know, as Mr. South just said, Capstone builds thousands of homes, so it would be fiscally difficult for them to go back to every single lot and get a redo on their structural plans, their mechanical plans, their engineering plans. Now, should they have in this case? I don't know the answer to that just yet, because we do have a companion case with Joseph Santos and Epic Engineering, who was actually responsible for the seals on the project that we're talking about right now. So Mr. Huff was not a registrant of the board and was a bona fide employee of Epic Engineering. He was supervised by Mr. Santos. So the technical violations that may be present in this case are being explored in this other case that I hope the board will hear in the next couple of months.
So,
sorry, Mr. South. I still want to ask Mr. Huff, and I want, 10-second answer or less. Mr. Huff, is the home in any imminent danger if there were saturated soil conditions or other issues?
So saturated soil conditions, if water was allowed to pool and saturate those walls.
Any condition, you know, that you would design for?
Well, the walls are 13 feet tall, and it's retaining soil on the inside of the garage, so that soil will never be saturated. You know what I'm saying? It's you got a garage elevated floor, and you got surrounding grade that's 10, 11 feet below that.
Okay, this is Neil.
So your opinion is there's no imminent danger to the structure. That's all I'm trying to get first.
Yeah, that's correct. And you're not going to see. You could investigate that and look really closely, and there's no signs of cracking or imminent structural failure.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Hupp.
Next thing I want to make sure. Sorry, I got three or four questions. I promise I'll be brief. Mr. Hupp, I'm concerned that first you stated that Epic had only done the lateral analysis. Then you said you did the standard details, which, for the record, yeah, standard details are used fairly extensively in the industry. But if you're going to provide, and I want to make sure you did this, if you're going to provide a standard detail for a 12-foot wall, you typically assume, bad conditions, bad foundation soil, fairly high soil pressures, things like that, so it applies to most sites. Is that how you guys
did
that?
That's correct. Yeah, we used the standard soil pressure of 60 pounds per cubic foot, at rest, soil conditions, and then the lowest bearing capacity, we used 1,500 PSF. But again, I don't think it's a good idea for a contractor to use that for every specific job. And that was never our, I didn't know they were going to use that specifically for this job, because nowhere on the plans that it,
Muffin, so next question, are you speaking, when you say you didn't do any work for this home, are you speaking for yourself or for Epic?
For Epic. So on this particular job, the South residence, there's a lady at our office, Libby. She did the calculations for the lateral analysis only, and then Joe Santos sealed it, reviewed it and sealed it. So I did not stamp those original construction drawings. Later on, I think in 2018, 2019, I got licensed in Arizona. And then when this came up, I was doing a lot of work for Capstone Homes, and I helped them address the situation. So that's my involvement.
Okay. So my next question is, in our packet, and I think the ledger alluded to this, on pages 659 and 665 and others, we have sheets specific to this home that have Mr. Santos's seal, who's Epic Engineering. How did that seal end up in those sheets if it wasn't specific to those sheets, if your work wasn't specific to that home?
Yeah, so good question. So when we do the lateral analysis, which is, the design of the shear walls, hold-down straps, shear wall nailing, there are hold-downs that are shown on the foundation plan. What Mr. Santos should have done and didn't do was to write below a stamp lateral analysis only, which would have let everybody know we did not design the foundation, but he stamped that foundation plan because there were hold-downs specified on that foundation plan that we had designed. So, unfortunately, that put us in a situation where it appears that the foundation was designed, but we don't have any calculations for it because we just did the lateral analysis.
Well, so you can understand how the owner of a home thinks that the home was structurally designed when, there's a seal sheet that depicts every structural element.
That's correct.
Also, Ms. Correll, this is more for you. I would like, for the case with Mr. Santos, the related case, I'd like to understand Mr. Santos's structural knowledge and experience, because when I looked in LinkedIn, he appeared to have zero experience on structural engineering.
I'll make sure that's included in our investigation.
Ms. Correll, you're going to be doing EAC on this?
Yes. We're already receiving technical assessments back, and we're in the process of scheduling an EAC for that companion case.
Great. Thank you. Okay, that's what I was going to suggest.
This is Mr. South. I would like to have a few comments here because I need to say some things. Yes, Capstone Homes builds production homes and has a custom home division. So they build the same home multiple times, and the custom homes, as this was a custom home, it was required to have full structural engineering on the home. And the custom homes that Capstone builds was using the model of Epic Engineering provided to Capstone. And so a lot of those homes have the same issues. They've been sealed by Epic Engineering. Now, in terms of that wall under the garage, which Fred Nelson is still defective, and which Adam Hupp is saying isn't, but of course Adam Hupp agreed it was defective last year, that wall, part of that wall goes under the front of the home, and that is where water comes off of the roof, and that wall, and Adam Huff knows this, was wet downstairs multiple times. So it does get wet. and Capstone had to go in and put some sealer on the wall between the garage and the house, because that wall extends into the front entryway, and that wall has been wet. And so, yes, water is getting under there, and I don't believe that that wall is safe, because Adam Huff agreed that it was not, it needed remediation, and it wasn't properly remediated, and Fred Nelson says that. And the reason Capstone Homes, I will tell you what they did in their deposition. They took two pictures. Here's what Capstone Homes told us they did. They took two pictures of the holes that Fred Nelson drilled into the walls all downstairs and on the outside. They cherry-picked two pictures where the rebar was in the proper position, and they sent that to Adam Huff. This is what they told us they did in the deposition. They sent it to Adam Huff and said, look, the walls, look at these holes. The walls are fine. And then they said, Adam Huff said, oh, yeah, you're right. Fred must have made a mistake. The wall is fine. And that's how it happened. That is the, and that's the sworn testimony of the president of Capstone Homes. And Adam Huff never got on the phone, never called Fred up and said, well, wait a minute here, I'm getting something different from Capstone. He didn't do that. He has all of the calculations. And it's just, it's beyond belief that he would not have a remediation done on that wall, which is a remediation, by the way. That wall, those walls cost close to $100,000 to remediate. But the walls on the outside of the home, where it's simple to get to, and he put buttress walls, which are very cheap to put up, all of those were remediated properly.
This is Neil Jones. Wait a second. Hey, Alejandro. How thick is that 13-foot wall? Is it a 12-inch block?
It's a 12-inch block. Number 8 says 8 in some center.
Okay. Thank you.
Well,
I think there's two differing issues. I mean, there's the issue of whether the walls and the design was deficient or not, but I think Mr. Huff did not seal those plans. It was Mr. Santos. There's the issue of who's the representative for Epic Engineer. I'm assuming, Ms. Correll, that Epic is registered in Arizona as a firm, and they must have a principal for engineering.
Yes, that's correct. Is that correct? Mr. Santos.
Okay, so that's also an issue with Mr. Santos. I think the issue we have with Mr. Huff is a separate issue as to whether, you know, any of the work he's done since is either deficient or in bad faith. And I'll be honest, I don't have the technical expertise to, you know, decide that. I think it could be premature without EAC review of structural experts to decide that.
Can I make a suggestion or request? Since this is just a letter of concern, this is directly related to the next case that the EAC is going to be looking at. Can we defer the results of this case and tie it into that one?
Or can we just move it? This one to that one.
Deferred.
Combine it.
Yeah. I don't know that we're going to come up with
I think that would be completely up to the board if you want to combine those two cases. I did reach out to several engineers regarding an assessment on this, and one of the engineers I spoke with was Mr. Andrew Natufke, and his immediate concern was that the seal belongs to Mr. Santos, and as Mr. Huff is a bona fide employee of Epic Engineering, Mr. Santos really has the onus of the design.
Right.
So whether Capstone took that model and applied it in error to another lot, that stamp still belongs to Mr. Santos. So I did attempt to get this case assessed, and immediately they were like, well, he's not really responsible for that, because Mr. Santos is the one who should have reviewed that. He's the one who said, yes, this is good. This is good to go. Which, you know, when Mr. Parlin and I have staffed this case extensively between the two of us. And that's why we moved those technical violations to Joseph Santos and Epic Engineering. Now, I do intend to use Mr. Huff as a witness. I think he's a critical witness. I think he had a lot of involvement in this case. However, that initial design does not belong to him. It belongs to Mr. Santos and Epic Engineering. That would be my professional opinion.
Wait. Listen, there are two issues. One is the house was designed improperly, and it was stamped by Mr. Santos. The second issue is it was recognized it needed to be remediated, and Adam Hoff did not do proper engineering in the remediation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. South. I think the board needs to decide. I think there's justification to, in effect, push this down the road to the next case and tie these two together. Mm-hmm. Because Mr. Huff is not a registrant at the time this occurred, so we have very little oversight on his particular performance. But we do have with Mr. Santos. So it seems to me it makes more sense to let Mr. Huff participate in this next review.
I guess I agree with you, Jack. I'm just wondering why Mr. South didn't approach Mr. Santos instead of Mr. Huff.
He may have been the alleger for that one, too, though.
I think our complaint is against both of them. He complained against both of them, Neil.
Okay. Okay.
I honestly did call Mr. Santos up. And I asked him, how did these things get stamped after we determined all these walls were defective? And he said he would get back to me, and he never did. I called him back, left the messages. He didn't return my messages. Now, in terms of Adam Huff became a registered engineer in Arizona several weeks after the plans were stamped. So for the whole remediation period, Adam Huff was an engineer in the state of Arizona, a licensed engineer in the state of Arizona. However, Epic Engineering had, during this whole period, had let their license, the company had let their license lapse and recently renewed it. Okay. But Adam Huff was licensed during the remediation, and I think he needs to be held accountable for the remediation work where a family is in an unsafe home.
May I ask the alleger, if Mr. Huff, I know on 835 stamped the remediation drawing, but as a registrant, you can't, I don't believe we're capable of enforcing a contractor to follow through. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Adam Huff gave Capstone the authority not to do the remediation. He said the walls look fine after he originally said they didn't.
Let me tell you what I did. Okay.
So they sent me
pictures, and they sent me measurements from the outside of the wall to the steel, and that's why, based on those measurements, I performed the calculations, and we show the wall worked with those measurements they gave me. Now, Fred said there were other locations that weren't, you know, the proper spacing from the steel to the outside of the wall, but according to Capstone, the ones they measured were okay. They had one that wasn't. But in a wall, you have so much redundancy with the steel that I didn't see that just one location. Maybe it was two, I don't know, but the one location I was told, I don't see that as a reason to tear the wall down and start over because you have redundancy. And in the design, it factors the safety.
Mr. Huff, this is Jack Gilmore.
Yeah.
I think we're getting too far into the details here right now. I'd like to defer this case until the next case involving Mr. Santos comes back before the board. We will have the benefit of the Enforcement Advisory Committee review. So if the board's okay, I'd like to maybe hear a recommendation or a motion to defer this until and tie it in with the next case. Scott, does that take a motion?
Actually, no. The board would not need to make a motion in that case. The board could simply defer this case to the next meeting. If you wanted to specifically tie it to another case, you would need a motion. But under the circumstances, the board could simply defer this case to the next meeting at which the other case would be considered.
Ms. Brother, that'll come before the next hearing next month?
It's unlikely because we haven't completed our EAC meeting, and there is a lot of documentation in this case, so we would probably be looking at April.
So
yes, sir.
Did you call Jason Madison to look at this?
No, I haven't.
So
I'd
like to get a motion then to defer this and tie this into the next case when it comes back before the board.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that, but I would also like to ask Ms. Correll if the EAC could look at Adam Huff's stamped and signed remediation because that is under our purview.
Yes, we'll include that in our hearing.
Just to give us their opinion.
I'll second Carmen's motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to defer this case until the case involving the claim involving Mr. Santos comes back before the board, maybe in 2 months. Kurt, can you do a roll call?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in, Mr. South and Mr. Huff.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, we have I'd like to get Mr. Greg Harris on. Do we need an executive session for this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I would move that we go to the executive session for legal advice related to the Greg Mills case.
Okay. Is there a second?
As noted in 90.
I'll second it.
Okay.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I think the board would actually have to specify this would be for legal advice from outside counsel, as it is under a different statutory executive session.
Okay.
I move that we go into executive session for legal advice from outside counsel related to item 90 of the agenda.
I'll second that.
Okay. Kurt, you want to take a roll call?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Motion carried.
So this is Greg Harris. Just so it's clear, right, there are two bases in the meeting notice, 341A3 and 341A4. So, Scott, is that was your clarification to make sure that both grounds were picked up in the motion?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
Certainly.
Yeah, thank you. So let's adjourn to the executive session.
All right. Everyone who isn't going on to the executive session, the public, just remain in this meeting. We're going to remove ourselves to the executive session meeting. Everyone else, please call into the executive session meeting. I emailed materials from Mr. Harris to you, so please look at those before you get over, and it's through an encrypted email, so you have to put in credentials and things of that nature, and we'll meet you over there. Yeah, and make sure you're not in this current meeting when you go into the executive. We are now recording.
Okay, we are back in session. We've just ended our executive session, and I think we're ready for a motion based on the outcome of that session.
Mr. Chair, this is Alejandro Angel. I would move that we direct Mr. Harris to proceed as discussed in the executive session, which includes, responding to the consent offer from Mr. Mills' counsel, and to continue to move the case forward.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Angel. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, Kurt, can you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, thank you. Kurt, I think we have anybody else online right now?
I think the next one.
Before we proceed, could I ask one question, please? This is Greg Harris,
sure.
Mr. Chair. So if I have communication back from Mr. Mills' counsel, is there a point of contact that I should reach out to for further correspondence, if there is further correspondence in this matter?
Yes. Let's discuss that for a second. Melissa's last official day is when?
March 5th.
So up to that point, I guess you have access to Melissa, but after that point, that we need to establish a new line of communication. And I'm assuming we'll have Robert Stamm as our interim director.
Right, so most likely, Greg, you'll be communicating with me.
Okay, very good. I just wanted to make sure that I had, I wanted to be sure that I was communicating with the right person. Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
I guess I would encourage you to communicate with Melissa up to the 5th and then bring in Rob into that discussion as much as possible so he's aware.
Yep, I'll do it. Rob, after the meeting's over, maybe later today or later this week, we can connect, all right?
Sounds good, Greg.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anything else for me, or I'm ready to sign off?
No, I think we're done for now. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Harris. All right, be well. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, Kurt, who else have we got online that we can...
Okay, I see next on our call-in list, it looks like David Capaldo for 6D2.
Mr. Capaldo, is that correct? Are you online? Is he?
I don't see any indication of someone speaking. He did not indicate to be called, but I do have his number, so I could call him if you wish.
Is there anyone else online right now that's waiting to address the board? I thought we have
Philip Rosenberg and Ahmad Zarifi for 6E1.
Mr. Zarifi, are you online? How about Mr. Rosenberg?
Online if they were expecting to be called.
Okay. I don't recall them saying call us, but I can definitely call them. I do have their numbers.
Yeah,
okay.
That's totally up to you guys.
So let's do 6D. Who's...
Do you want to do D2 and just try to give him a call?
Okay.
Okay.
Since we've already called this one up, any of the board members want to discuss this particular item? I think the background in this thing is extensive. This guy's got some litigation, and he has been held to be accountable for his performance back in Pennsylvania. Any board members want to discuss this, or is you guys ready for a motion?
Mr. Chair, I wish we could get him on the line. I see that his registration is expired right now. But yeah, certainly what happened in Pennsylvania seemed egregious. He was falsifying records of sewage discharges for 20 years.
Right.
And sort of still hasn't taken responsibility. So this clearly affects the public. It sounds like he doesn't want to voluntarily surrender. But I guess I would ask Mr. Kramer, I mean, did we actually offer that consent agreement, and did he reject it? Or can we still offer it to him? Voluntarily surrender. No,
it was offered and he rejected it. He won't take responsibility for his actions. He said he placed all the blame on his sole employee that was with him and also convicted of, I don't think he was convicted, but he was implicated with Mr. Capaldo. But he would not take any responsibility for that.
Is there still a case?
Right. And he was convicted of two charges. One was tampering with witnesses, which was his employee. The other one was the falsifying of the records. So I don't know. That speaks of bad faith to me. I would suggest that we move forward to a revocation hearing.
If I may, Dr. Angel, if I could ask a question here. As has been pointed out, the registrant appears to have expired. If he's expired, then the board would not have jurisdiction at present to move forward with the case, but would certainly be able to consider this should he try to reactivate a license or bring it back.
Even though he's still, he's expired, but he hasn't been canceled, we still don't have jurisdiction? If that's the case, I'm okay with it.
He's delinquent, not expired, right?
Yeah, so he still can renew it.
Yeah, he can renew.
Okay, so he hasn't expired yet. Okay, I apologize then, my misunderstanding. I thought that he had been fully expired.
Yeah, I don't know, Scott, I'm not sure what it is. I mean, he's expired, but not canceled.
Well, at present, he's a registrant, but he does not have an active registration, correct?
Correct.
This would be something the board wouldn't really, if he's an expired status, the board wouldn't really have jurisdiction, but if he attempted to bring it back from expired status, the board could certainly consider this in whether or not to allow him to have a license back or to grant him any registration in the future. But if he's actually on expired status at present, unless he goes to reactivate it, the board would not have jurisdiction.
Just so I could clarify, this is Kurt Winter. I think the use of the word expired is just indicating that he was in active status, he did not renew, now he's in delinquent status, and 3 years down the line he'll go into canceled status. There's no expired status for registrants, it's just delinquent. He's currently delinquent.
Okay. In that case, if he's delinquent but he's not expired or canceled, then yes, I take that back. The board would still have the authority to pursue him. And I apologize, my misunderstanding. I thought that he was in expired status at present.
So we could send him the consent or agreement, and if he doesn't sign within 30 days, we go to hearing?
It's already been sent to him.
Okay.
It's already been sent.
It says offers proposed consent. Hmm. I didn't know what said already.
We can go directly to hearing, or we can reoffer the voluntary support
option. How about Mr. Parlin? Maybe I know we already offered it, but I think we didn't tell him, or did we tell him that if he failed to sign it, we would send him to our revocation hearing?
We did not, because it didn't come from the board.
So maybe, that might give him a little bit of motivation to sign it. So I would move that we offer the consent agreement as drafted by staff, and if not signed in 30 days, we move forward to hearing to seek revocation of the license.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second.
And a second. Kirk, can you make a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel. Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, thank you. I bet you take Bruce's name off that. Can we go to item 6D1? Mr. Garcia. I don't think there's Kurt, anyone else online? No one's called in?
Well, so we still have three call-ins. We have Philip Rosenberg and Zarifi, so I might try to call them.
Okay.
And then Ian Finley also requested to be called
right.
When it comes to his matter. So at this time, maybe I can call up Zarifi and his attorney.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I wish.
Mr. Rosenberg, if you're online, hit star 6 to unmute yourself.
Yes, I'm online. Can you hear me?
I can. I'm now going to call Mr. Zarifi. Mr. Zarifi, if you're online, hit star 6 to unmute yourself.
Hello?
Hello, we hear you, Mr. Zarifi.
Yeah, who is this that's calling me?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Kurt Winter at the Arizona Board of Technical Registration here at the board meeting. Are you able to speak at the board meeting today?
Well, I thought that I got an email from you that you put it on the delayed it to 26th. That's what my email says. I got an email like yesterday that the meeting is changed to the 26th from the 23rd.
I don't think so. I don't have a...
Well, do you want to wait for a second? Because I still have it on my email.
No. Would you like to proceed, sir?
Well, I'm not. I got the email, but I'm not ready. But let me go and get. Can you give me a little bit time, like half an hour, so that I can get ready?
Who wrote it?
He was provided a notice to attend the board meeting, both electronically and via USPS. I believe Mr. Winter sent him out emailed instructions to participate as well.
Hmm. Hello?
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 Hello? Who's speaking?
Yeah, this is Ahmad Zarifi. I don't know what happened. I have a I have an email that my meeting was changed from the 23rd to the 26th. And he says, no, it is not the case, and I'm not 100% sure, so I have to go and check it. But in any case, I'm asking if you can just give me like 20 minutes so I can get ready for it, because I'm not ready.
It's your call.
Mr. Chair, I think the half an hour, if we have other cases we have to hear, some of the licensing cases and some of the other cases, I'm okay with it, personally.
We can do 61.
So do I have half an hour? Can I get half an hour or no?
We can go to 12 o'clock, noon.
Yes.
Yeah, that's okay with me. That's perfect.
Okay. Will you call back
okay.
in, please? Are you going to call him?
Either way.
Yeah,
I like Kurt calling.
Does
All right.
that work for Mr. Rosenberg? He's the ledger in that case.
Mr. Rosenberg, are you okay with this?
I'm okay, except that I got the proper notification via email and mail, and that's on the 23rd, so
okay.
That's why I'm here.
Okay. Appreciate that, but we'll take this up at 12 o'clock in a half hour, actually 27 minutes.
All right.
Okay.
You're welcome to stay on.
I'll still be here.
Okay.
Let's go to 61.
Okay. Let's just go through here. I think you guys still have 6C1 as well.
Oh. Yeah. 6D1?
C's and cat. I see it has not been motioned.
Oh, yeah. We don't have a call-in for that one either. Okay. 6C1. Yeah. This is a... We have a signed consent. Dr. Angel?
Sorry, I jumped the gun. I was just going to ask a question of Ms. Correll on the case, but I need to introduce it. My bad.
He's already accepted.
thing.
We can proceed, Jeff.
We have a signed consent.
Yep, and I'm good with that. My only question for Ms. Grell is whether a corrected survey has been recorded. He said he was going to, but I wanted to make sure that it had been recorded because it was a fairly big discrepancy.
Yes, it has been.
Okay. Thank you. Then I move that we accept the signed consent.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second, but motion by Dr. Angel and a second by Mr. Jones. Kurt, can you do a roll call?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Okay, on to 6D1. This is a proposal to offer a consent agreement. This is case number P21-007. The synopsis of this complaint. On July 27, 2020, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent and respondent firm advertised the practice of land surveying on their website without firm registration with the board. Board records show that respondent filed an application for registration as a land surveyor on June 1st, 2020, but there is no record of registration for the respondent firm. The investigative conclusions. This investigation concludes that respondent has violated board statute ARS 32-121 and ARS 32-141, and that respondent and respondent firm advertised the practice of land surveying on their website without firm registration with the board. Who's our investigator on this one?
Thacker.
Do we know, are they appropriately registered now as a surveyor and as the firm?
There's no indication of the report. Let me
look at that. Mr. Chair, I took a look last night, and Wood River Consulting is current now. I think they registered in January of this year, so after the events happened here, but they are currently registered.
Okay. Any discussion by the board?
I have a few. Mr. Chair, I mean, one of them is we're offering a civil penalty and a letter of reprimand to someone who's not a registrant. So I don't think we can do that. Right?
Oh, good point.
So, and then, so a couple of questions. One, it says that the respondent filed an application in June, but do we know if he actually got registered or not? It doesn't look like he did, but what happened with that application?
I think Robert's looking that up right now, Dr. Angel.
I don't see his name in the system, but I will take a look down.
So the company's registered, but not him?
The company has somebody else listed as the main registrant, like a Melvin. Let's see, Jeffy Garcia. Application was closed for Garcia. Garcia never received registration.
Is he even employed there anymore? We don't know.
Wood River. Wood River is they're licensed, and for their principal to be licensed is a gentleman named Melvin. Bautista.
So maybe the question is, so there's two people involved here. The person, Jeffrey Garcia, who's a non-registrant, although this is not about him specifically, it was just that board staff observed the firm's website advertising the practice. And the firm got registered now, but it's a different registered at a different address. I think the address that we had on the communications is different, Rob, than what we see on the firm registration. My suggestion would be that we try to approach him one more time at the new address before we take any action.
Well, do we address the firm and the registrant, who is not Mr. Garcia?
Yeah, it would be whoever the registrant is for the firm,
yeah.
Which is Melvin, whatever his last name was, in the firm, who was responding.
So we could just move this off.
Do you want further investigation?
Rob, should we move this to the next month's session? Give you guys time to figure this out?
If you want it.
Yeah, well, we can do that.
All right. Let's, we'll defer this particular case. Oh.
I apologize.
Hey, Sean.
I was trying to get myself off of mute and it wasn't coming, so I was just speaking to nobody at this point so I can answer all the questions.
Okay.
All right. So Mr. Garcia had this business open and operating. He is the actual holder of the business. The company's in his name, Dr. Angel. But the problem is this case was held off the agenda. So during that time, we have a new officer or firm registrar that holds the registrar.
And that's Mr. Batista?
This was
new information.
So the firm is registered, and so is Mr. Garcia?
Mr. Garcia is not.
Is not, okay.
So I think we would have a case with Mr. Garcia still, in the sense that he offered to practice at the firm as a person without registration. I just think we should try to reach him at the new address that's provided on their firm registration. I don't know if Mr. Donald is there, you know, so that's Mr. Garcia. As far as the firm, I mean, is it appropriate? I'm thinking it's not to hold the new principal accountable, given that the firm got registered after these events took place.
Well, Dr. Angel, you're correct in that the board has limited authority with non-registrants. With regards to the firm, regardless of who the principal of the firm is, the board could pursue the firm for holding out as being able to practice a regulated profession. It would be able to, and I think the consent agreement is correct in that the consent agreement calls for a civil penalty. The civil penalty would be the only resolution available against the firm. Ultimately, the principal would be signing on behalf of the firm, the board wouldn't be going after the new principal necessarily. The board would still be pursuing the firm, but the principal would simply be signing on behalf of the firm. So the board could pursue both Mr. Garcia for any actions he took individually, as well as pursue the firm, and the principal would simply be signing as the authorized signer for the firm, which would actually be suffering the discipline.
Another quick update. Mr. Garcia, when he applied in our state, we have to first apply to sit for the state-specific exam. He did so. He was authorized to sit for the exam. I don't believe he has taken and passed the exam yet. His next step would be, once he passed it, to apply for registration.
So do we need to modify then this consent agreement to reflect just the firm?
Trump now is very low.
So it's just the firm that's referenced here is not registered, but they are now registered.
So how can we go after Mr. Garcia if he's not a registrant? I mean, civil?
No. I don't know if that's worth pursuing.
Was Garcia advertising his practice?
Correct. We have evidence.
Yeah. We just tell him if he was registered, this is what would happen to him.
We don't have evidence on Garcia. He's just the owner of the business.
Okay, I've been lost right now. The consent agreement is asking for it just states.
Would it be appropriate to just make the consent agreement with Wood River Consulting and their principal with the board, and then just keep the same terms? Reoperate at their new address, and if we don't hear back, then we go to hearing on that, on the firm registration.
Well, I don't know how we can hold Mr. Batista responsible for an unregistered firm before he became principal unless we can prove that he was...
Well, we're not really taking any action on Mr. Batista individually as principal of the firm. We're not doing anything to his registration. We're just imposing a penalty on the firm. And he's just the legal representative for the firm, I think.
So yeah, legally speaking, this wouldn't be any different from if the board were going after, say, Microsoft, and you know, they changed chairman of the board. It wouldn't matter who the chairman of the board was. You'd be going after the company. This would be a very similar situation. The principal of the firm can change. It's still the same firm if it was committing a violation a year ago as opposed to committing it today. So the person listed as principal is on the consent agreement on, I think it's page 5. The person is signing personally and on behalf of Wood River Consulting. It would simply be a matter of the board if they were no longer going to pursue Mr. Garcia. It would be representative for the principal of the company signing on behalf of the company.
So the consent agreement would change to eliminate Mr. Garcia and just hold it as the firm.
I think so. And then on the last page, Mr. Batista would be signing, not just personally, unless Mr. Brown says otherwise, he'd be signing on behalf of Wood River Consulting.
Yes, because legally speaking, this Wood River Consulting is an LLC, so it's a limited liability corporation. It can be served. It has standing. The board can pursue an LLC, and the ownership of the LLC may change, but in this case, it's the LLC is holding out as able to perform the functions of a registered professional. The board would be pursuing the LLC for this violation, and it would be serving the statutory agent for the LLC. The person who would be authorized to sign would be either the statutory agent, presumably, or the principal of the firm. They would be able to enter the firm into a consent agreement for discipline.
Okay, that makes sense.
So the findings of facts don't really change. It's just except the reference to the firm at let the registration lapse. And we'll get rid of Jerry Garcia's name on the signature. Okay.
Jerry?
Jeffrey.
Jerry.
Sorry. Okay, do we need any other discussion on this item? Okay, can we get a motion to proceed with this revised consent agreement?
Mr. Chair, I would move that we revise the consent agreement to be focused on the registrant firm and the lack of firm registration. So that would revise the conclusions of law. And then reoffer it to Wood River Consulting and send it to their new address of record on Sawyer Street. If they don't sign within 30 days, we would move forward again.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Angel. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second. Kurt?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried?
Thank you. Okay, so 11 minutes.
I wonder if we can do the item seven.
Yeah.
Do seven?
Staff recommends.
Yeah, let's do on item seven. Staff.
E7A.
Okay.
The first seven. Four are universal. Do you want to lump those together?
Yeah.
If not, no big deal.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to consent license matter 7A, B, C, and D. To grant licensure.
Okay, we have a motion for item 7A, B, C, and D. Is there a second?
I'll second that, but I have a question for you.
Okay.
The one of them is one's a geologist and they're applying for a universal licensure. How is that differ than just applying for a license? They're already licensed in another state. They passed all, everything we require.
It's an easier process, Steve. It can be. Basically, all they have to prove is that they live in Arizona and they've been registered in another state for a year. Those are the two basics. Otherwise, they'd have to prove they've taken the FG, the PG, they'd have to find that paperwork, they'd have to get references.
Well, that's what this person said they did.
They have, probably. But the universal is just a different route.
Okay.
And they don't need to provide references and all that stuff, right?
Exactly. That's the main difference. It does make it easier if you don't have to provide the references or transcripts because you've already done that to the state you were originally licensed in.
Okay. Kurt, can you want to roll call on those four items?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Motion carried unanimously.
Okay, we have item 7E. Mr. Wang is registering for electrical engineer. Is there a discussion?
Mr. Chair, yeah. So on these applications, this is a case of someone who works in industry, in mining in this case, and doesn't get the opportunity to have a lot of PE supervising their work. So we do have a statute, 32.122.01, where we can credit experience that's not attained under a PE by a two-thirds vote of the board. What we've typically done in the past is we've asked for resumes of those other non-PEs to make sure that we think they're, you know, qualified to provide a reference and speak to the individual's technical abilities. So that's the only thing I see missing from the application. She, you know, she has the education. She provided the certificates. We just don't know if the people that provided those certificates of experience know what they're talking about. I would assume they do, but I don't know. For our records, it'd be good to have that. If those checked out okay, I would be glad to vote for her registration.
I can request the resumes and then put them on the next board meeting.
That works for me.
Okay. All right, thank you. Can we go on to 7F then? Andrew Leon, registration for civil. Disciplinary action.
Just because of disciplinary action is why it's on here.
Could you offer an explanation?
He did.
Oh, go for it.
No, go ahead, Rob.
Mr. Leon received disciplinary action in North Carolina. Usually what I see disciplinary action and then they're retained, like then if he got a license in North Carolina, it would seem like it's no big deal. But he never received a license in North Carolina, so I brought it before the board. I believe in the packet it shows what the board decided, the board order. And it mentioned that he assisted another to evade or attempt to evade certain provisions of the state, affix seal to work not done under direct supervisory control, a responsible charge, and produced a substandard report. and failed to properly sign a document by using a facsimile signature. This is back in 2018, so it's fairly recent. Mr. Leon is also currently licensed in Pennsylvania and has been for, looks like 18 years.
So he did provide an explanation where I think what it comes down to is he basically said he wasn't familiar, as familiar as he should have been with the North Carolina standards. On assisting to evade the provisions by doing a field or fixing a field to work not done by himself, he said he did do the analysis, but they used a third party to do the site survey, and the state required that they do the site survey themselves. And then he, instead of using a new digital seal, he sent something by fax, was what failed to properly sign the document. The substandard report was the fact that he didn't do the site visit as well. So.
And he was up front. He did check yes that he had disciplinary action, and he provided the board order and his explanation.
He was issued a reprimand.
Yeah, so.
And he paid a $3,000 civil penalty.
Yeah, my thinking is he already paid his dues. Pennsylvania didn't think it was egregious enough to do anything, or any other state. It doesn't seem like it to me either. I don't see a need to do anything.
Okay.
Dr. Angel, I'd agree. It doesn't seem egregious.
All right. Is that right? We need to vote on, yeah, we need to vote. So is there a recommendation? Somebody might make a motion, Mr. Leon?
I'll move that we grant registration.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Kurt?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everoad?
Aye.
Motion carried.
It's almost 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
Do you want to do the cancellation list?
Yeah. Let's do item 8A1, the cancellation list. Anybody got any questions?
Let me check. See if Neil's on it.
Sapid doing their job.
Sure it is. It's the first time I haven't noted or haven't didn't know anybody on this list.
Yeah, I didn't. So I'm going to make a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'd make a motion that we accept the case 8A1 canceled list of registrants.
Okay. Thank you, Neil. We have a motion. Second.
Second.
Thank you, Clarence.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everoad.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Let's go back to 61. Mr. Zarife, are you back online?
Did call him, right?
Okay, I'll call him.
Oh, okay.
And this is 61. All right, let me give him a call. Let's see if he's ready to go.
Oh.
Sorry, thank you. Sure. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Zarife. This is Kurt Winter at the board. Are you ready, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Rosenberg, are you still online?
I am.
Thank you. Okay, this is case number P20-054. The synopsis of this complaint. On June 25th, 2020, the board received a complaint alleging that on or about February 10th, 2019, respondent engaged in the practice of structural engineering when he signed and sealed structural calculations for the Sacco residence at 5307 North Sundell Drive in Tucson, Arizona, at a time when his registration As a civil engineer was restricted from the practice of structural engineering as specified in Board Order P14-035. Board records show that the Board Order P14-035 became effective on January the 25th, 2017. It included a revocation of respondent's registration as a structural engineer and an indefinite restriction from the practice of structural engineering until respondent provides proof to the board that he has passed the 16-hour NCES structural examination and registers with the board as a structural engineer. Board records also show no indication that respondent has passed the structural exam or made an application for registration as a structural engineer. On June 29, 2020, a second complaint was received alleging that on or about August 29, 2019, respondent engaged in the practice of structural engineering and he signed and sealed a framing plan for the Sackler residence, 5307 North Sundown Drive in Tucson, Arizona, at a time when his registration as a civil engineer was restricted from the practice of structural engineering as specified in Board Order 14035. The investigation conclusions include three violations. The first, ARS 32-128C4, as it relates to AAC R4-30-3014. And that respondent failed to comply with state, municipal, and county laws, codes, ordinances, and regulations pertaining to his area of practice by engaging in and practicing structural engineering at a time when his registration as a civil engineer was restricted from the practice of structural engineering as specified in Board Order P14-035. The second violation, ARS 32-128C4, as it relates to AAC R4-30-30117, and that respondent accepted a professional engagement outside of his professional registered category when he signed and sealed structural calculations and a framing plan for the Sackler residence at 5307 North Sundown Drive in Tucson, Arizona. And third, ARS 32-150, and that respondent failed to comply with the board order by practicing structural engineering in 2019 on the Sackler residential project located at 5307 North Sundown Drive in Tucson, Arizona. Okay, Mr. Rosenberg, you are the alleger in this case. Would you share your position on this complaint, please?
Yes, it's. I think you've read it properly. If you can hear me all right, you've read it properly. Also wanted to point out there's continuous damage that the house is suffering from because of other design issues that Mr. Zarifi attempted that have even been noticed and commented on by Pima County Building and Development. Those are the people that authorized permits in Pima County here in Tucson, Arizona.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Zarife, can you share your position on this complaint, please?
Okay. What you read is correct, but there is misunderstanding, and the plans, I sent the copy of the plans to you, and the plans all the plans are model plans. A friend of mine wanted to build a model house on a certain lot, and he came to me and asked me to. Hello.
Hello. You're listening. Continue.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me or no?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, because you guys are breaking a little bit, so I thought maybe you are not hearing me. But please stop me, say something if you don't hear me. Anyway, so what it is that he wanted, hello?
Hello?
We're still here.
Yeah.
And we'll let you know, but there's no breakup on our end. We hear you perfectly fine.
Okay, thank you so much. I'm gonna start all a little bit from the beginning. I said the house, all the plans except for the site plan is a model plan that a friend of mine wanted to build on a specific lot in Pima County, Arizona. So he came to me and asked me to provide us. Hello?
We hear you.
Come on.
Okay, he came to me and asked me to provide for him a site plan. And I did the site plan. And if you look at the stamp that it was approved by the county, he went to the county and he approved for a permit. The permit was issued on 2/16/2019. That is February 16, 2019. And if you look at the set of plans, the only plan that has my stamp is the site plan. You can look at the floor plan, you can look at the framing plan, and all the other plans, I have no stamp, nothing. I stamped only the site plan, no framing plan, no nothing. Then after the house was completed and built, the inspector went over there and checked the house, and there were some difference between the permit plan and between the permit submitted. So the inspector asked the contractor to go and submit an as-built plan, and the as-built plan was submitted to the county The as-built plan was submitted to the county on August 29, 2019. Okay, and if you see on that plan, I stamped the as-built plan for the changes from the original plan. There is a mechanical loom on one side. I clouded, and there were some other little issues, not the framing plan. I stamped that.
Mr. Zerfe, hello.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
The question is here, did you prepare the structural plans for that home?
No, sir, I did not.
So someone else prepared the structural engineering plans for that home?
The plans and the structural plan, all the plans for that house was a model plan, and it was submitted by somebody else. If you look at the sheet number 3, that's the structural plan. I did not stamp it. I did not prepare it. I have nothing to do with it. If you look at the date of the permit, which is February 16, 2019, you will not see any stamp on the framing plan or foundation plan or anything.
So your involvement in this project was strictly a site plan.
My involvement, sir, was strictly a site plan on that specific site for a set of model plans that the owner had. The owner was at that time TC Coronado, and I did not stamp any drawing except for the site plan.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Sarifi. So,
yes, sir.
But then in August of 2019, your stamp is on the asphalt plan on sheets that one has structural calculations, the other one is the framing plan, which is, both of those are obviously structural work, and they have your seal on it. How did your seal end up on that framing plan?
I will tell you, sir, what happened. I will tell you, it's a little bit unfortunate, but I will explain to you. The contractor of the house was my son. My son is a licensed contractor, and he is a civil engineer. He's not an engineer, he's an EIT. He hasn't taken the test for his exam. So when the inspector went there and he said that there are some changes and asked him to provide another set of as-built drawing according to what was built, so he went there and he prepared the drawings and everything, the as-built drawings, and he asked me, can you stamp this for the changes? And I look at the plan, I mean, the changes were so minor, they added a They added some kind of a storage room on one side of the drawing, and then he changed some details on the garage, some joists on the garage. Now, I stamped that sheet based on what was changed, not on the accuracy of the framing plan or anything, but the calculations that was done by my son. He's an engineer, and apparently, without my permission, he stuck that calculation on the foundation plan. I see that, but that's all that I can tell you.
Mr. Sharifi, but put aside the foundation plan and what your son did or didn't do, I mean, why were you doing calculations and why were you drawing little details for the framing plan if you know you have a practice restriction already with the board because you had discipline on structural engineering? Why?
Sure. As I explained it to you, the calculations are not on the framing plan. The calculations
are... The framing plan has a detail for a bearing wall, and it has your seal on it.
Yes, sir. I'm trying to tell you that the only plan, when I submitted the changes to the as-built, the changes that were shown on the as-built plan, I stamped it for that reason, for the as-built plan, the changes that were done, like the storage room and this and that. But now the calculations and the details, my son did that, and unfortunately I was in Boston, Massachusetts, and he put those two, the calculation and the detail on those two sheets. I guess if you say I'm responsible, he did it without my permission, and if you tell me that I'm responsible, I am, but I did not do that. There is only one joist that he changed, and there is the framing plan. Everything else is exactly from the model plan that was not changed at all.
Right, but I don't want to be dramatic because hopefully there's nothing wrong with it, but it's not about how many joists he changed. One is enough if it fails. So I'm concerned that, you know, either you practice when you know you weren't supposed to practice, or if you didn't, you failed to keep control of your seal, and then your son is practicing structural engineering without a license. Both.
No, first of all, sir, I have control of my seal. Because I did tell you that I sealed that sheet for the as-built plan, the things that were changed. And number one. And number two, I did not practice structural engineering from the time that you took it till the time that I was limited for not using it till now. It is kind of unfortunate that because of COVID-19, I went to Boston to stay with my daughter, and he didn't do anything with my stamp, but he did the calculation himself. He's an EIT engineer. He is not a civil engineer. He doesn't have a license, and he did that, and he put it there, and I think that's the true explanation. I did not stamp any structural calculations or the framing plan. The framing plan was there as part of the model plan that was submitted by the owner. And you can see that framing plan on the February 19, it is not stamped. I did not stamp. Only one sheet I stamped. And that one sheet that I stamped was the site plan, which I'm allowed to do.
May I speak?
Absolutely, sir.
Is it Mr. Rosenberg?
Will the board allow me to?
I'm sorry, I cannot hear. I heard like two, three people talking, but hello?
Hello.
Hello?
Ms. Rosenberg, did you want to speak?
Yeah.
Okay, please.
Yes,
do.
I do. I have a framing plan on my desk to the left of my telephone that is stamped and sealed by Mr. Zarifi. dated 8/28/2019, showing the start of the calculations and details, with a note on the plan that says CC A1 for calculations and detail clarifications. It is stamped and sealed by Mr. Zarifi once again on 8/28/19. And then, of course, if you travel over to sheet number, the site plan, you can see where the revisions to permit number P1ABP0700 continue. The calculations continue as noted back on the framing plan where it says to say C sheet 1A1. So there are two sheets that are clearly stamped and sealed by Mr. Zarifi. That's all I have to say.
Okay, can I, this is Ahmed Zarifi again. Can I talk?
Yeah, I'm looking at sheet on our page, the board, this is for the board's method. Page number 1317, 1317, and it shows Mr. Zarifi's seal on a framing plan.
Sir, this is Ahmed Zarifi. Can I talk?
Please do.
I'm sorry, can I talk?
Yes, you may.
Okay, sir. Okay. I want to explain to you that the house got a permit on February 2 of 2019. And it is stamped, the permit, on the very top. And then, after the February 16, I'm sorry, on the February 16, on the permit drawing, if you check it, there is no stamp on any sheet except for the site plan. My stamp shows only on the site plan. All the other sheets were prepared by somebody else, and it was a model plan. Now, it took about 6 months for the house to be built, and on the date of approximately August 29, 2019, the inspector went inside the house to check the final inspection. When he went for the final inspection, he saw some changes. He saw that there is a room. If you look at the plan, there was a storage room added on one side, and there was a few other things. And the inspector said, go ahead and submit for a, what you call it, a as-built plan. On the as-built plan, the date shows right there, 8/29/2019. And I, as I said before, I'm saying again, yes, I did stamp the as-built plan on the structural sheet because I stamped for the changes, not for any structural calculation. Unfortunately, to get by and to answer the inspector, my kid that is living in my house, he put those details and the structural calculations on the sheet that I stamped, on one sheet only. The rest of the sheet, there is no sheet, there is no three sheets, there is only one sheet. So, and it is, and I stamped it for the changes. So I explained that, and the difference in time is approximately 6 months, and the house was built, it was framed, and it was framed according to the plan of somebody else that I did not stamp. I did not put the joist. I didn't do anything.
Apologize, Mr. Zarifi, but if the city was asking for a stamped as-built plan, is it reasonable to suggest they were asking you to stamp it because they wanted you to check the changes and approve them?
When the city goes there and they want to ask for the as-built plan, if they see that there is the inspector, when they come, they are not engineers, they are inspectors. Some of them are not really, they don't really know that much in structures and stuff like that. They see the changes. If they see the changes, like you added a small storage or this and that, they will tell you to go and make sure that it is okay. And I checked it. There is a storage room. It's 4x8, and I stamped it.
I believe the reason they asked is for an engineer to look things over and engineer to make sure it was safe. as constructed. So I believe your stamp there is actually certifying that you practice structural engineering and that it's safe.
Well, ma'am, I'm sorry to tell you, is that the change is bubbled out. The only change that he wanted me to check was the addition of the storage unit on the right side of the drawing. I'm not approving anything. I bubbled I bubbled the storage of adding a 4x8 storage. That's what I did, and I checked it and I stamped it. I'm telling you the truth. Now, if you consider that addition of that 6 months later after it was built, if you consider that as structural engineering, then I really don't think that I can argue with you and I say, no, you are wrong. It is what it is.
Mr. Zarifi, this is Neil Jones, architect. You just said previously, though, that your son, without your knowledge, stamped it. And now you're saying that you stamped it.
I the drawing was stamped by me, but he put the calculation without my knowledge.
What about the notes that say new as-built revisions, water heater room, revised framing for laundry, calculation and detail for garage and laundry room framing? Who wrote those notes?
Which notes are you talking about?
This is on the framing plan, on the as-built framing plan. It's your seal.
The seal is mine.
Yeah, then to the right of your seal, it says new as-built revisions that go with the clouding that you did. It says water heater room is number one, revised framing for laundry is number five, calculation and detail for garage and laundry room framing is number six. Who added those notes?
I added the thing that was built new, the room that was added on the right side of the building. I clouded that and I added, and I think that those are my sons that he didn't include the structural calculation.
So what I'm getting is that you just put your seal on it and then your son went to work on it, because all those notes are made by the same person, and it covers not just the laundry room, the water heater room. It defines how to frame the garage. It has the spacing and the size of the joists. It has the detail. I mean, you're saying you just stamped the sheet the day before the submittal, and then your son went down and worked on the sheet.
No, I stamped as far as the changes are concerned on the sheet. I don't really know whether I did it the day before.
One of the changes on the sheet, Mr. Zarifi, is the framing for the garage and the spacing and the size of the structural elements for the garage. That's one of the changes that's plotted on the sheet that has your stamp on it.
When I stamped it, it has that mechanical room or a storage room on the right side of the drawing, and I don't really know whether I stamped it the day before or a week before or whatever, and then after I died or a month before I was gone, and then he probably added those changes and the joist and this and that. So that's all what I have to say.
I would like to make one more comment, if you will accept it.
Okay, Mr. Rosenberg.
On the framing plan, not only is the noted there the new as-built revisions, number one is the water heater room. Number two is landscaping something, revised framing for lot. And then number six clearly states calculations in detail for garage and laundry room framing. And then, of course, at the center of the page off to the left, there's a specific note that says, see sheet A1 for calculations for detail clarification, which is just appears to be a note pointing out that go to sheet 1 for the continuation of the calculations done by Mr. Zarifi.
Right. Ms. Rosenberg, just for the record, are you the homeowner? Are you a general contractor?
I am a general contractor, currently working actually on behalf of the homeowner, trying to sort out the problems we're having with the house, not only these plans, which are again recognized as a problem with Pima County building officials currently, and other issues we have with work done by Mr. Zarifi that was not permitted on the job site that contains retaining walls in excess of 4 feet in height that are failing.
What, Mr. Rosenberg?
Can I add something, sir?
No, Mr. Rosenberg.
This is Ahmed again.
Mr. Zarifi, let me. I have another question for Mr. Rosenberg. Mr. Rosenberg,
yes.
Was a structural engineer hired for this home?
Not yet. My customer, the Sacklas, Dr. and Mrs. Sacklas, purchased this home, and it was built by Sammy Zarifi LLC, and the superintendent for the job site is the man you're speaking with today at Ahmed Zarifi.
So, sir, this is Ahmed Zarifi. If you can, after you're all done with Mr. Rosenberg, can you please give me a chance to talk?
Yeah, well, you've had your chance, Mr. Zarifi, but I guess we're trying to understand the nature of your relationship with this particular home.
Well, you know what? If you let me, I can explain to you the nature of my relationship, okay?
Wait a minute. I think it's time to hear from our in-house investigator on this.
Hi, this is Investigator Carell. I'm not clear on the nature of the relationship between if they built this home and then sold that home. I'm not clear on those details. However, I would offer to the board that this case was sent out to assessment to Mr. Schlesman, who did also note that while the changes made by Mr. Zarifi were pretty minimal, he still overall exercised poor judgment by stamping those plans. Mr. Schlesman didn't necessarily have an issue with the calculations that were performed. However, they were not qualified to perform them. And that is the bigger concern that I think Mr. Rosenberg, which is what really, you know, sent this case to our office, is that ultimately it shouldn't have been completed by Mr. Zarifi in the first place. I'm not clear on the nature of that relationship.
So there's a Zarifi, okay, that is the general contractor. Can you give me one minute to tell you about the nature of the relationship, please? Mr. Zarifi, wait a minute. You have your chance. We're still discussing this.
It sounds like the son is a general contractor, from what I've gathered. I don't know if they built this home. I don't know how they came into owning this home, but it was sold, and it looks like, you know, most of the work was done in the Zarifi family.
Okay. All right, Mrs. Zarifi.
Can I try now for 1 minute?
All right, 1 minute. 1 minute.
Okay, please, sir. The house was owned by a friend of mine, and he owned the house. And when he sold, and later on he went back to Greece, and he sold the house to this new gentleman, and we never owned the house, and this doctor gentleman, Dr. Sackler, he bought the house, and we never knew that they bought the house. We just found out later on when they complained about their question and complaint about the question. Now, as far as Mr. Rosenberg,
Mr. Rosenberg is famous. He's fishing for, he sends letters to new home buyers and fishes problem, and then he goes and gets iron, and then he finds if the walls are not level or any little problem, and then he goes and he sues for hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's what he is. He's very famous. Everybody knows him in Tucson. And now my poor kid, he's about 30 years old. Now he has to deal with this guy that he has a world of knowledge regarding lawsuits and stuff like that. The guy, the doctor, lives in the house. There is nothing wrong with the house. And he is still living in the house, and they are suing, and you know, and that's the story. He never owned the house, not even for a day. Okay? So the owner was somebody else.
All right, thank you for explaining that. I want to open this up for more discussion just by the board.
Can I do 30 seconds? I didn't know how famous I was. But also there is a current ROC complaint against the Zarifi group, and which consists of approximately 12, 14 pages of complaint items that have been acknowledged by the Registrar of Contractors.
Okay. That's by you. End of you complain.
All right, hold on. Thank you for sharing that with us, but I think it's now discussion just by the board.
And if you want any autographs of this famous person, let me know. I'll provide them.
Okay. Board members, how do you want to proceed? It seems pretty clear that Mr. Zarifi has stamped a framing plan, which is structural.
Just wondering about the administrative penalty.
After the house was built.
This recommendation?
Doesn't matter.
All right.
Well, so my one question, and maybe for Ms. Correll, did we ever talk to Mr. Zarifi's son? Did he support his dad's version that, you know, he did the calculations?
Hi, Dr. Angel. This is Investigator Correll. So this is the first time that I'm hearing of that. The communications with Mr. Zarifi have not been great overall. Mr. Zarifi didn't actually even reply to this case until January 21st of this year. So the information that we've gotten from him has been questionable at best. The son stamping the plans is literally the first time I'm hearing that today with you guys.
I realize he's been hard to track down because we had this case back on the board in December, but on his January 21st response, he did allege that it was his son who did the plans or the calculations and not him.
Well, he said that they were prepared by his son, but he didn't say anything that they were stamped by his son. That's definitely something that...
No, I think what he's saying, if I understand correctly, is that he stamped the framing plan just for the tiny little, HVAC room on the right side of the house, and that then his son came back and clouded everything else, added calculations, added notes, and that's what he claimed his son did, not him.
Sir, this is Ahmad Zarifi. He didn't cloud everything. He clouds only the things that you see, and your investigator told you that
the changes are so minor.
You are right, but the changes are so minor that even your investigator said that the changes are very, very minor. And what my problem is that
Mr. Zarifi, I've heard your story. Would you please let us discuss the case?
I think the issue, Dr. Angel, is really just the inconsistency in the statements that we get from Mr. Zarifi. I did not reach out to his son. I did not realize that was going to be an allegation here at the board, although I'm happy to follow up on that. I find it difficult to imagine that his son is going to admit to stamping these plans or participating in that, but we can certainly go down that rabbit hole.
The only reason I hesitate, Ms. Grill, is because I think Mr. Zarifi already has a practice restriction
and we have the ability to revoke if he breaks the terms of his consent agreement. That's the next step, and that's such an extreme measure that I hesitate to do it unless we're absolutely certain of it.
Well, given the allegation that the son stamped these plans without Mr. Zarifi's knowledge, does the board want to open a companion case and investigate that issue?
Is that what he said, or he stamped it, his son?
I didn't hear that.
I heard stamped it first.
Excuse me.
Sir, this is Ahmad Zarifi. I already stated the fact that I stamped the sheet. My son only did the structural calculations and stuck it on the drawing, and the changes are so minor, and if you want to go and revoke my license for that, you just go for it. That's what I'm going to tell you. I am not going to go and say something wrong that my son stamped it. No, I stamped it, and if the investigator wants to talk to my son, she is welcome to go and talk, and at least hear before saying that she is not going to say that. How does she know that he's not going to? If he did it, he will say it.
What I think the case would be against his son is the fact that he took a set of plans that were already stamped and altered them without permission from the registrant, and then he also performed structural calculations without a structural engineering license,
right,
or without an engineering license. That's what the case would be with Mr. Sarifi's son. Not that he stamped it, but he altered someone else's plans without permission. Is that what you said, Mr. Sarifi?
I didn't you say the stuff. The content of what you said, I agree. But I didn't say it in the terminology that you said, that he changed the content and this and that. But yes, he clouded those and he put those things and he put the sketch, but he did not put the stamp.
Right.
Well, he's not registered though, is
he? Say EIT.
So how do we go? We can't. How do we go after him?
Put a note in his file when he applies for his PE.
This will come up. Then you can ask him.
You guys can ask Scott, I imagine.
There would be a question of whether this this would be a board question, but whether it constituted the practice, the unlicensed practice, whether modifying stamped plans after the fact would constitute the practice. Again, it would be up to the board to determine whether or not that constituted a violation of board statutes.
And this is Investigator Correll. Given the statement and the information that we're getting today from Mr. Zarifi, I could definitely see how this case could warrant additional investigation.
Primarily involving his son?
Primarily involving the son, yes. I think it's pretty clear that Mr. Zarifi did stamp those plans. He's now said it several times. But regarding the son's involvement or his practice or his use of that seal, I would think we would want to look into that.
Well, how is a permit issued without structural calculations on a set of plans anyway?
You have to have a registered. So the city, this is Ahmad Zarifi for residential drawings. All what you have to do, if you follow the prescriptive design, you do not need an architect, no structural engineers, no mechanical, no electrical. You just submit the plan and they pass it.
So is there a... Dr. Angel, do you think we should be looking at this again?
In my stamp?
I'm sorry, so what did you say?
No, Mr. Zarifi, the board's discussing. We'll bring you back on if we have a question.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking to me.
Mr. Chair, to me, revocation seems excessive, but it also seems like we need to do something because I don't know if Mr. Zarifi is understanding what a practice restriction means and how close he is to being revoked. Letting other people or practicing on the edges of structural engineer, putting his faith in other people to certain plans in for him that he hasn't done. So I'm, I guess what I'm saying is that I'd probably be okay if we did a letter of reprimand and then an administrative penalty with Mr. Sarifi. We already have a consent that allows to revoke if he does it again. Right?
Well,
this would be the final strike.
We do have a recommended offer for a proposed consent agreement. Should be, I think it's part of the packet here.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
So we're
recommending
a letter. One thing I'm wondering is, why does it matter to have a state suspension if we already have a practice restriction and the ability to revoke?
Well, the state suspension would be for the terms of the new consent agreement if that's offered and executed. The consent agreement for P14035, I don't have in front of me, but is that a state revocation or a state suspension?
Yes, I think it is, and it's with a permanent practice restriction until he passes the exam.
Yes, that's right.
And so that would be the violation that we're bringing forward today, the violation of that term and that order, P14035. I just don't recall if that included the state revocation or not.
I'm 99% sure it did.
Is it a violation if it's the residence? Didn't they just say you didn't have to have a structural or an architect involved?
But if they are registered with the board, then they do need to stamp those plans. So you can be a non-registrant and work in residential up to certain qualifications, you know, if it's a multi-story or depending on the square footage. However, if you are a registrant, even if you are working residential, you still need to seal those plans.
And he did. And he did.
No, but Your Honor, I didn't prepare the drawings. The drawings is a model plan that the owner had. The only thing that I prepared was the site plan, and I stamped it.
But you also stamped a framing plan that showed an extension of the mechanical room and those other items.
The framing plan as to the shape, the mechanical room was added, and I see it that it was added, and I stamped that too. But it didn't really need any structural, a 4x8 mechanical room doesn't need any structural, so I stamped that as to the content of the change of the exterior walls of the building.
Mr. Zarifi, I think you're missing a point. You put your stamp on a document that you should not have done, irregardless of the scale.
You know what, Your Honor? I want to tell you one thing, okay? I'm 70 years old, and there is COVID going over there. You are here sitting and arguing to revoke my license. I'm 70 years old because I put my stamp on a drawing that showed a 4x8 sheet. And if you want to do that, I would like to go and call for a hearing and come to the hearing with my lawyer. But I don't think that it's fair to just go and revoke somebody's license for doing such a small thing. The house was built. It was finished. It was about to be occupied by the owner. And I didn't do nothing, no structural, no electrical, no mechanical. It was the plans were brought to me by the owner of the house.
Mr. Zuma,
I did only the site plan.
Very clear. Thank you. It's up to the board. One comment,
if you don't mind, is when he stamped and sealed these documents in August of 2019, the house did not final with Pima County 8 months later in 2020.
Right. Thank you.
Right.
Dr. Angel, I think...
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Mr. Sarifi is missing the point in that we are trying to not revoke him. But I do want him to understand he has no business dealing anything that says framing plan or anything remotely related to structural because he has a practice restriction.
Agreed.
So my suggestion would be that we continue the investigation with the son, or that we open a parallel case with the son. For Mr. Sarifi, I would suggest that we revise the consent agreement. You know, maybe remove the stay suspension if we don't need it, and instead provide an administrative penalty. I don't think it needs to be $6,000. I think it could be $1,500. But the finding, I think, is that he failed to keep control of his seal. Because evidently, what he sealed and what was submitted is different. I mean, he let somebody else submit for him and didn't control that. So maybe we redraft the consent under those lines, you know, along those lines, and then offer it to Mr. Sarifi to review.
Okay. I support that.
I would recommend keeping the state suspension probation on, because if you're going to assign an administrative penalty, then you need to hold them to those terms.
We can reduce the administrative penalty.
That's fine. Something. I still think we should keep the state suspension.
All right. Okay. So, Dr. Angel, the motion is you're going to revise your motion, or you want me to sum it up?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think it needs to be a motion. I think it's more direction to staff to continue the investigation with the son, but revise the consent with Mr. Sarifi to reflect what we learned here today. The issue is not so much, I mean, as he claims, is not that he practiced structural, is that he failed to control his seal. And then add the estate suspension and the administrative penalty of $1,500 and offer it as a consent. Unless new evidence comes to light that changes the board or, you know, staff's mind.
So that doesn't take a motion to change the consent agreement?
I think you're just directing staff to do it, and maybe they'll offer it another time. Okay. Scott, are they able to do that?
Scott.
Yes, I'm. Yes. Yeah. Sorry, I was having a mute issue there.
All right, thank you. So, we are going to move this down to the next 1 month, the next month? Is that enough time?
No.
No, that won't be enough time to investigate.
That would be a new case. Yes.
Yeah. So, you'll bring that back before the board when you've done your research with the son.
Yes.
And then you're going to revise the consent agreement now and go ahead and send that out.
Yes, I believe so. Okay. However, for clarity, it sounds like the violation was changing to failure to control his seal and not a technical violation. So I just want to be clear on what the violations included in the consent agreement should be.
Ms. Grill, I think that's what I'm thinking, but I think you should interview the son first. The son might contradict his explanation and say that he didn't do anything, but if the son admits that he was the one who modified him without his knowledge, then I think that's the correct violation.
So it sounds to me like we're not quite ready to offer a consent agreement at this time, so we should continue investigation, is what it sounds like to me.
Does he still put his stamp on a structural plan?
Correct.
That's the issue.
Correct.
Yeah. I think we have a violation. We just don't know which one it is. Is it that he didn't control his seal, or is it that he practiced?
That makes
and part
sense
of it depends on what the rest of the investigation finds out.
So, do you want to hold off on the consent agreement until we further the investigation?
Sure.
I may have to. Yeah.
I think so too.
Okay, Mr. Zarifi, we'll be. We'll be bringing this back before the board in the near future, and you'll be notified. Thank you, Mr. Rosenberg, for calling in.
You're welcome. The famous Mr. Rosenberg.
The famous Mr. Rosenberg, indeed. Thank you.
Mr. Zarifi,
hello.
We're done with the matter. If you would like to hang up, if you can, but you don't have to. You can listen in on the next matter if you wish.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I think we have one final item, 6F1.
Mm-hmm. Let me give him a call.
Yep.
6F1.
Yeah.
Right. Mr. Finley?
Yes, this is me.
Okay, this is Kurt Wintrit. We're in the board meeting currently. Are you able to talk with the board right now?
I am. Let me just get out. I'm in an apartment unit, but I'm going to get out for a second.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. This is case number HI-19-023. There's good prior board action on this that we can review, and there was a signed consent agreement that Mr. Finley has an issue with. The synopsis of the original complaint was occurred in 2000, or November 12, 2018. The board received a complaint alleging the respondent failed to accurately report on the adverse condition of the garage floor, the countertop in the garage, the light lens covered in the garage, three closet doors on the second floor, the air ducts, the attic access, cover board, the bathroom medicine cabinet, and that respondent failed to report the presence of a bird nest above the front entrance door and window, and the presence of leaves around the outdoor AC unit while conducting a home inspection at 1480 East Geary Drive in Chandler, Arizona on or about September 6th, 2018. It is further alleged that respondent firm conducted a home inspection at a time that the firm's registration was expired. Respondent firm registered, registration expired on January the 5th, 2018. Investigation conclusions. This investigation concludes that respondent has violated board statute ARS 32-141 and that respondent firm practiced a board regulated profession without board registration.
Mr. Chair?
Okay.
If Mr.
Finley, do you want to
introduce yourself?
Scott Donald.
I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, thank you, Rob. Mr. Chair, if I may, I may be able to. To clarify a little bit of the issue here for the board, the actual investigation in this case concluded a while ago, and Mr. Finley entered into a consent agreement with the board in July of 2020, and that was accepted by the board on July 28th of 2020. So the actual investigation has been long resolved in the case, and the consent is long accepted.
Right.
The issue appears to be a presence that Mr. Finley provides services as a mentor, effectively, and he's unable to do that under our statutes because the statutes require that you not have had discipline in the prior 3 years. So Mr. Finley is now found himself unable to do something he would like to do under our statutes, and now Mr. Finley is alleging that the consent agreement involved only the firm and did not involve him personally. And Mr. Finley, by all means, please feel free to correct me if I'm misstating any of this. Is that accurate?
Seems like an accurate summation. Yeah, I was never under the impression that my actual home inspector's license was in any kind of jeopardy after we found that the report, the complaint filed by the customer basically was a nuisance complaint. It was without merit. And then when the consent agreement was offered, I was under the impression it was specifically and exclusively pertaining to the firm registration violation, and that I wouldn't be in any kind of issue or problem with respect to my license itself, since I hadn't done anything wrong as a licensee.
Now, if I may say for the board, that is where opinions diverge. And basically, the issue before the board at present is the consent agreement. The board will have to look at the consent agreement. There are a couple of things here. The board's going to have to take a look at the consent agreement and determine whether it involves just Mr. Finley's company or whether it was with Mr. Finley and his company. And the only options legally really available to the board, because it is
You're cutting
way out. Beyond the point. Oh, I'm sorry. It is way beyond the point of any typical appellate action or anything like that. The only options really available to the board would be to try to do a different consent agreement for Mr. Finley. The problem is he would still have this consent agreement having happened within 3 years. So there are going to be a number of legal issues regarding this, and at some point the board may wish to go into executive session for legal advice regarding it. But I will say flat out that the consent agreement very plainly states in its own terms that it deals with Mr. Findlay and his registration number and the firm and the firm registration number. The consent agreement in the first paragraph refers to an agreement between Mr. Findlay, the respondent, and his registration, the firm as respondent firm and its registration, and the board. The factual allegations involve respondent performing the home inspection and then issuing the report through the respondent firm. The conclusions of law refer to respondents, plural. Conclusion of law number 11 is the conduct and circumstances constitute a violation by respondent firm, and allegation of violation number 12 is the conduct and circumstances constitute a violation by respondent. There is a clear differentiation between respondent and respondent firm throughout the document. There's no question that it involves both the respondent and the respondent firm. And the administrative penalty is assigned to respondents, with it being jointly and severally among the both respondents, and the cost of investigation as well are jointly and severally liable by both respondents. As well, on page 7, Mr. Findlay signed personally and on behalf of the Inspection People, PLLC, respondent firm. So the problem is that Mr. Findlay at present is in a position where he entered a consent agreement that by its own terms was for discipline against him individually and against the firm as a firm. But the problem is now that agreement is preventing him from doing something else that he would like to be doing under the statutes.
As a registrant home inspector and not as the firm, I've always had a difficult time understanding why it seems like the two things are lumped together when it was clearly found that as a licensee, the inspector, there was nothing wrong with what I did as an inspector, and it was just a firm. And I keep likening it to, you know, if you're pulled over with expired tags, your license doesn't get suspended, you know, just it's a tag infraction, which is kind of what I view the firm registration as. And I just don't understand why the consent agreement was written in such a way that the two were lumped together, conflating the issue. That's what I don't understand. Would an inspector that works for my firm, if he was in a similar position, would the firm then be, had he been working for the firm and the firm hadn't had the proper up-to-date registration, would the licensee, if he were found not responsible for any of the allegations from a member of the public, but the firm registration was expired, would the same situation arise?
If I may make one correction, Mr. Findlay, you continue to say that you were found not to have any, that this was not found to have any violation with regards to you. That is factually inaccurate. The consent agreement, the findings of fact, specifically indicate a factual basis for the violations by both you and the firm, and the conclusions of law specify a separate conclusion of law for an allegation each by you and by the firm. When the board voted this matter to proceed to a hearing, they voted it as towards you and the firm. There absolutely was a factual basis established for a violation by each, by you and the firm, and that is what the board forwarded it for.
Mr. Donald?
Yes.
You're absolutely right, but I think understanding Mrs. Finley's request here is that the reason why the original complaint came in, which was, you know, deficiencies with the home inspection, that was found not to be an issue. The issue was the lack of firm registration, and both him and the firm were, you know, had some responsibility for the firm registration because he did an inspection for a firm without registration that didn't have registration. And so I have sympathy for him. So I have questions that I don't know if you'd rather answer here or in executive session, but one of them is there a way to waive the requirement for not having discipline for 3 years, that the board can do that so he can do what he wants to do? Or two, can we amend the consent agreement to make it specific to the firm and not the individual?
Dr. Angel, honestly, this will probably require legal advice that the board may wish to enter executive session for.
I would appreciate. So I'll call for legal or for an executive session to get legal advice, which I think would be appreciated.
I'll second that, Dr. Angel.
All right. Thank you.
We need to have a vote.
Kurt?
Yeah, getting there. Okay, Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Hi.
Jack Gilmore.
Hi.
Neil Jones.
Hi.
Clarence McAllister.
Hi.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
All right, motion carried. Okay, everyone who's on the line that's not going into the executive session, please remain on the line until such time, and we will be back.
Okay.
Okay, we're now recording.
Board is back in session. Mr. Finley, are you available?
I'm here, yes.
After much discussion, Mr. Finley, I think the board finds itself in a position where we are sympathetic to your cause, but not in a position where we can change the outcome of that prior consent agreement.
Okay. That's a little disappointing. I just don't understand why my ability to grow my business is going to be penalized for such a minor infraction. What I got you guys there, what are the rules and regs regarding tenure required to conduct parallel inspections when you're training somebody? And what I mean by that is somebody that's working for my company, would they be able to assume that role so that I can continue to grow my business?
Well, it's for the company. It's yourself and the company. It's 3 years.
Oh.
So anybody that works for me as well?
Maybe, no. I think it's a...
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Thank you. The statutes actually specify all of the regulations. The board may not want to get into a position of trying to proactively give advice based on hypotheticals, because it's something that the board interprets its own statutes and rules. Were a problem to come up, the board at that time would interpret their statutes and rules as applied to a specific circumstance. So unfortunately, the board can't really, beyond pointing to the statutes and the rules, can't really do any interpretation. For people.
Oh, so there is a statute and rule regarding employees working for my firm, what they can and cannot do.
Can
I note, Mr. Donald and Mr. Finley, if you refer to Rule R430-102, that has the home inspection definitions and addresses the requirements for parallel inspectors and what they need to meet.
Okay.
R430-102, and that's on the board website, but we really can't give you a guide beyond that. But that's the right place to look.
Okay, so, I guess it's a two-parter because I can look at that for what the requirements are for an inspector to perform parallel inspections. But then we have this overarching issue now where there's I'm being sanctioned, my firm's being sanctioned. Would that translate through to anybody that works for me also being sanctioned because they're working for my company? That's not a hypothetical. That's sort of a yes or no.
Right. I think if you read the rule, it will answer that question. I just don't want to answer it because I don't think it's my place. But the rule addresses who the qualifications pertain to, whether it's the firm or the individual.
Okay. All right, I'll go from there. I mean, that's definitely disappointing. I just don't feel like I did anything that terrible to be hamstrung for 3 years like this, but seems a bit of an extreme punishment for a very minor infraction.
Thank you, Mr. Finley, for calling in.
I appreciate you guys considering it and taking the time. I do. Thanks so much, guys. Take care.
Good luck to you. Okay. Next item I've got is 8A2. I think that's just a review of the new granted registrations.
Keep her on there. Keep her on there.
No, there's no vote required for that. So we can go on to, I believe we're done with all the embarrassment, licensing, and okay. Item 9, policy matters.
Well,
I have a quick question.
We'll see.
Who on the board currently has to leave early and at what time?
I have to leave at 2.
Okay. Clarence says 2 o'clock.
Oh, boy. 2 for me.
Okay. Sounds like the meeting's ending at 2. So if you guys have a specific thing you want to get to, you got half an hour.
Probably should. Shouldn't we do the farewells and then the officers?
Election.
There's 2 officers. We already caught his farewell.
So, gosh, yeah, we're losing Melissa and Jason. Jason still with us?
I am.
All right.
I've been listening all meetings.
Yeah, but
half-headed.
Have you had lunch yet?
Yes, I did. I eat peanuts throughout the day to sustain myself.
We didn't do bad.
I'm sorry.
If I can say one thing, Jason, I never knew what I didn't know about surveying until I met you. So thank you for, weighing in and teaching and I appreciate it. I know so much more about the nuances now than I ever did.
Well, you're welcome. I hope that I've made a positive impact on everybody and it provided tools for you to evaluate more than just statements or opinions, but to help you guys help yourselves examine surveys and the work of surveys.
You're going to be
deeply missed, Jason. Big time.
Well, I'm going to miss you guys.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, this has been just the greatest experience and opportunity for me, and just nothing but enjoyable.
What are these farewell things?
You just couldn't discuss it unless it was on there. If you wanted to say goodbye to Foose, you couldn't do it unless it was on the agenda.
Yeah.
Same thing with Melissa. That's why they're on there.
Thank you for your service. Thank you for your service, Jason.
Thank you.
So you're going to be on for a while. Should we do board elections that we can keep Foose online and pester him?
Before you go to that, this is Jeannie Ray, and I'd like to say, can I please say goodbye to both Melissa and Jason Foose? Express how what a pleasure and great honor it has been to work with both of you. And although I'm sorry to see you go, I know change is constant. And I wish you both the best in your future.
Thank you, Jeannie. It's been the greatest pleasure to work with you too. As I said earlier, I've just appreciated all of your participation and attentiveness in helping guide the board working through the situations we face.
Alejandro, anything you want to say?
No, I'm not. Just kidding, Jason. You know we're going to miss you a ton. Not just the the technical part, and all we still don't know about Survey, but your guitar skills too. So it's been good to be here with you.
Well, if I learned anything at the board, it was from Jason Madison. Vote no.
Rob, is there anything procedurally we got to get done before the we lose quorum?
I think there is. We need to do the vote for the
Board election of officers, and let's see.
And me, right?
And then 17.
Oh yeah.
So, if you want to go jump to the
let's do Robert first.
Okay, because I guess Jack can just continue to be acting chairman until such time that you guys elect somebody.
We still got a half hour.
We can try to get it.
Okay, well, you want to jump to 17 or 10?
17.
Okay.
17A.
So we're going to 17A.
Oh, okay. Compensation.
The board may want to go into executive session for confidential information. 17A.
Killing me.
This is why nobody likes lawyers.
Robbie, you're that close.
Something else we can do?
Do the rest of them have to be executive session? The hiring, yeah, I get it would, huh? B and C. Okay.
It's going to take.
All right.
Yeah. You're going to go in and out of like three times. So,
come on.
Three times?
Let's skip
it. A, B, and C, you're going to practically...
Once we're in there, we can just stay in there.
Yeah, right. Do all three at the same time, right?
Yeah. Scott?
Okay.
Yeah, if you're making a motion to go in, it would be to go into executive session, confidential information, possible legal advice regarding 17 A, B, and C.
Okay.
And then come back out and vote. Thank you. Robert, you better have some candy or something in there.
Well, this is a motion?
This is a record.
I need a motion.
We need a motion. One meeting.
Move to go into executive session for 17A, B, and C.
For?
Executive session.
For?
17A, B, and C?
Legal confidential. Oh. Look up there in the italics.
For whatever. Executive director position. I got you.
For legal and confidential information.
For confidential information and receive legal advice.
And we need a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Done deal.
Whoa! I gotta get an actual.
Give you a roll call.
I gotta do a roll call. What are you guys doing?
Hold on.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Here.
Jack Gilmore.
Hi.
Neil Jones.
Here.
Clarence McAllister.
Hi.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Hi.
Stephen Knoll.
Hi.
Andrew Everode.
Hi.
Motion carried. We are now recording.
Okay, thank you, Kurt. Back in session. Let's go right to 17A, Interim Director's Compensation and Scope of Employment. Somebody want to make a motion? I think based on our discussion in executive session, we're all in favor of Robert Stamm being our Interim Director and the compensation package we discussed. So I think we could be ready for a motion. Is that adequate, Scott?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would make the motion that we adjust Rob Stram's compensation as interim director for the parameters we discussed in the executive session in recognition that he, in addition to doing his regular job, he will be doing the director's job for the next few months until we find a new director. I'd also move that we make that retroactive to the day when he started taking the responsibility for the Rose Support when she went to the FMLA.
I'll second that one.
Do we have that date? Do we know what that date was?
We'll have that date.
Okay,
we have a motion and a second. Kurt?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Right.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Maybe it goes without saying, but I think the other item we discussed was that his responsibilities, his duties, and authority would be the same as those that the executive director would have while he's been from.
Understood.
Without saying.
Thank you. We want to go into the executive director hiring process right now. You want to do elections?
Do elections.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe on B and C, maybe just a short discussion. I think we already delegated in the hiring committee. And Andy, did you know that you were part of the hiring committee?
Yes, I do. I know.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
So thank you.
So I would just, my thought would be the committee would have complete freedom to do the process early on, to figure out questions, screen candidates, and then bring finalists to the board.
Makes sense.
It's just what we talked about last week, so
yeah.
Nothing new.
Are you still taking in questions? Have you got a good list to work from?
Actually, not for much content.
Of questions? Well, I thought that we were going to get something to Carmen.
This is Kurt Winter. Because we didn't really communicate well enough to say that it has to occur in open meeting, the agenda didn't really come about in such a manner that it allowed for that. So.
And the committee has to meet in open meeting. I don't think it was clear, but it is. So.
But the committee is able to agendize its own dates and times. The board does not need to agendize or make those dates for them.
Great. And the committee, we're going to repost the job, and the committee will figure out what the right job description is and everything else, right?
I believe that's what your first task then was.
Well, what are we going to do with the resumes that have been submitted over or under the previous posting?
Those are still good according to DOI, so we can still use those.
Okay.
We will just repost.
Yeah. They don't have to resubmit their applications.
We don't have to resubmit an application. They're still.
Okay. Let's get on to the elections.
All right.
Time for some new blood. Carmen?
If Scott Donald and everybody else will help me through my first few months, I'm going to need a little help.
You'd be a great chairperson. I nominate you.
I second.
I third it.
Ready to go, Carmen.
We'll have legal counsel, absolutely.
Is this taking a lecture a vote?
Well, who's vice chair?
Jack can remain vice chair, but you need a new secretary since Carmen is the secretary.
So we have a motion and then
are you off the
I'm
board?
I'm on my eighth year or something.
Seven.
Yeah.
I'll do it again.
Okay.
I'm on a string.
Have you ever been secretary?
What do we need?
And who wants to be secretary? It sounds like Neil would do it again.
I'll make a motion for Neil Jones.
Clarence, you want to do it?
I'll take some.
Or Clarence?
Yeah.
Clarence could do it.
All right. So what's the slate? We have a chair, vice chair, and chair, and a secretary.
Yeah, we have Carmen for chair, myself for stay on as vice chair, and then Clarence for secretary.
Great.
Okay.
All right. I move that we appoint those officers.
I'll second it.
Okay. Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Can you vote?
Motion carried.
Okay.
Back on the hiring committee for a second. I think I've linked in with most of you except Neil Jones, who has one connection. What the heck's up with that? But when we get it reposted, Scott, we're allowed to broadcast a public, like, hey, we're looking for a director. Go online. Like, we can help advertise that, right? I think
I'm on mute. Yes, absolutely. The board members are free to let people know that the state is hiring. Yeah.
Okay. I think the more all of us can get on that, but I hope maybe we can find a time as a committee to meet this week so that can be pretty rapid in honor of the people who already applied.
Right. And this is Kurt Winter. When you guys want to meet, I need time to create an agenda, which usually they're not very complicated, but we need that 24-hour window to post it legally for public meetings. So if more time you get me to do that, the better.
I know everybody loves Friday afternoon meetings.
Okay, Rob, anything procedure else we need to go over? Any director reports, Kurt?
I have two things I would like to bring up just real quick, just because I handle the SendGrid mass emailing. If we go to 9C regarding SB 1304, do you wish that I send some kind of correspondence to the registrant population regarding that bill?
Yeah. Do you have any updates on that, Alejandro?
I do have an unofficial update. The 1304 is going to be set aside and not heard on the floor.
Yes.
But I've only heard that from one person, so I'm keeping an eye on it. My suggestion is that we as a board don't reach out, frankly, because I think it'd be counterproductive. If you listen to the committee hearing last week, they were very assertive. The sponsor was very assertive that she felt like the board was part of the establishment and was trying to keep this bill from happening. So I suggest that anything that engineers or registrants want to do, they do it through their professional organizations, which we have to do with that. So that'd be my suggestion.
So did you speak during the committee meeting?
Yes. You should hear it. It was fun.
I bet.
Wow.
I try to do my best Neil impersonation.
Thank you for representing us. I appreciate it.
And
yeah. One issue I brought up that I think hasn't gotten enough, discussion is the fact that if engineers are removed from the board, they represent 60% of the registrants and 60% of the fees. So the board would have to function with 40% of the money, but still keep most of its regulatory and licensing responsibilities. Because, most of the cases are not engineers. It's, there's a lot of home inspectors, surveyors. Even the architects. So I think, even though it's intended for engineers, it affects all of our professions.
Alejandro, what about the engineering societies? Are they supporting us?
ASCE is opposing the bill, yes.
Okay.
Opposing the bill.
Opposing 1304. 1304 would group engineers under ADOA, is what was proposed.
To let private organizations such as ACEC discipline?
I don't think ACEC has taken a position yet. But I've had discussions with ACEC.
What about 1062? Definition of an engineer.
Honestly, I think that's going to continue to move forward. It already passed the full Senate on a 24-5 vote. Our best bet is to make people aware of it and try to work some improved language for it.
Oh, great. So. Bills. I know. Oh, my God, yeah.
Okay, Kurt, anything else on those?
The only thing I had too is that, but I guess it could be hold off. I was just wondering if we do get language for the executive position and we do post that, if you wanted me to mass email the registrant population about that opening.
I would support that.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
For the hiring committee, you guys have any time between 12 and 3 on Thursday?
I do.
And does that give you enough time to post it?
On Friday?
Thursday.
Anytime between 12 and 3 on Thursday.
Yes, I have until 12 and 3 on Wednesday.
Yep.
Yes.
Carmen, I'm wide open on Thursday.
Ooh.
How about one on Thursday?
Perfect.
Good.
Thanks, Carl.
Cool. Excellent. So, thank you. Rob or Kurt, you guys will handle the logistics.
So that's you and Doug.
We will. Right?
Yeah.
Robert.
Awesome. Thanks.
Okay, we've got one, two.
For scheduling purposes, just so you know, you only need 24 hours lead time. You have to have an agenda posted 24 hours prior to the meeting, but as long as you do, that's sufficient notice under open meeting law.
Right.
Thank you.
Do we need to look at question or item number 11 real quick? I think we know the answer to that.
Yeah, you got Boos.
Yeah, you have to be a Arizona resident.
He still is, though.
Well, I do have a question on that item, and you know, maybe it's not a big distinction, but the resolution that he should step down immediately upon moving, was that a legal opinion or was that the governor's request? I mean, they both carry weight.
But. Is Foo still on?
Jason? He said he talked to the governor's office, and that's what they told him.
Yeah. That's my understanding as well.
Okay.
Which doesn't seem right, but...
It doesn't seem right. He's still a resident of Arizona.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, about 3 minutes to go. We got next meeting on March the 23rd. And... any last items?
Did Scott have any updates on that open meeting law complaint number 12?
A response to the open meeting law complaint was filed, but there has been no notification of action taken regarding the response. So I will notify the board as soon as we get anything regarding that.
Good. Thank you. All right, nothing else. I think we're adjourned.
Right on time.
Congratulations, Carmen.
Thank you, Jerry.